On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicon, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And the thing's being held together with spit and toilet paper, but I think she'll make it. Whew. Yeah, a couple of minutes late getting started, but we are, by God, on the air, even after a technical crisis. A technical crisis that ate up my relaxing weekend after getting home from D.C., that's what happened. I got home from D.C. I had shut down everything, the whole studio. Don't want to sit here and just waste electricity. Ben took over the stream, so I shut down everything. Got home, fired it up, and got a bizarre message from the machine, the main production machine, which refused to boot. So it's been pretty much a weekend of testing and sorting out and trying to figure out what in the heck was wrong where. I know you're probably tired of the Bob's technical nightmare stories, but look, it's part of the fun, guys. It really, really is. This is part of the excitement. This is part of the little thrill it is to fire everything up and see if it goes every night, and it's going. We got it to where it would go at the very last instant. That's when we got the sound card driver software installed in the new old streaming computer, graciously provided to us by Joe Vecchio's House of Wayward PCs. And so it took some doing, but we're there. The streaming machine came out of its position and went into the position of the production machine. So Lord only knows but everything appears to be working, with some exceptions, which I will sort out later. And I am so glad it worked out. I would have climbed air had I not been able to get behind this microphone this evening and talk with you. What a week it was, and what a weekend. You already know why the weekend was interesting. But as for the week itself, you know, Wednesday, we all piled in. Agnes, me, Margie, Ferg, Doodle, as well as our good friend Lorella Scarborough, and headed north and slightly east to Washington, D.C. for the first hearing in a generation on mountaintop removal. Mountain removal. Because, as I've said, it ain't a mountain when they're done with it. They didn't just take off the top. They ruined the mountain. 500 of them, to be precise, and more that have been ruined. And so, see if I can pull my wits together enough to tell you the whole story. We crammed Agnes, me, Margie, Ferg, and Doodle all into the same little tiny hotel room. It was over in Arlington, and for shorthand, we will just refer to it as the Bates Motel. Although I wasn't sure when I got to where the room was. It used to be one of those motels that had all outside entrances. And there's been some renovation over the last 47 years. It was a 47-year-old hotel. You know, I like old architecture. This hotel was new when the Kennedy administration was new. It sits tucked in amongst a bunch of high-end Marriotts and embassy suites and so forth. Tall, gracious, beautiful affairs. And this little hunk of land with the hotel on it sits squatted in there hard by the highway. And it was like time traveling. Truly it was. We were we saw the room. It had a window unit air conditioner and a window unit heater over by the door. Out on the balcony with the white gloss painted iron railing. Very reminiscent, really, if you think back to the photographs, the very sad photographs, very reminiscent of the same architectural style as the Lorraine Motel in Memphis, Tennessee. And you know, of course, the significance of that place. The bathroom had pink glazed tile floors. I mean, this thing was straight out of the late 50s, early 60s. And it just had Bates Motel written all over it. Agnes looked at me and said, you know, I'm kind of tired. I think I'll get a shower just to freshen up before bed. I said, for the love of God, Agnes, stay out of the shower. And then we found out that the bathroom window didn't lock. The one that faced out onto the balcony. The one where Norman Bates would crawl through. There was an old gentleman working the desk there who worked nights, who had worked the place. He told me the hotel was 47 years old and he'd worked there 46 years. So we had a little strategy session after we got there. And that involved our good friend J.W. Randolph and some folks from Save Our Cumberland Mountains, some folks from Kentuckians for the Commonwealth, who all of whom have become dear friends now of ours. And the hearing was scheduled for 3:30 on Thursday afternoon at the Dirksen Senate Office Building, fourth floor. The slowest elevator, by the way, in Washington, D.C., is in the Dirksen Senate Office Building. And we agreed that we would meet at about 10 o'clock in the Dirksen Senate Office Building cafeteria, the Dirksen SOB cafeteria, which we did, and then had a bite of lunch. Nice little cafeteria, by the way. They serve sushi at the Dirksen SOB cafeteria. So naturally, my children and my wife jumped on the sushi. I opted for the pizza and a nice salad. So we finished lunch, and we headed up to the fourth floor. And we found the hearing room, which was, of course, closed. You can't just go in and sit down and wait for the movie to start. No, 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 no. And so we proceeded to form a single line. We're West Virginians. We're good at it. You know the old joke. Why can't they take a group picture of West Virginians every time they say cheese? We form a single line? Yeah, we do. We're good at single lines. Some of us, however, did deem to lean against the wall, at which point a very stern, skinheaded Capitol Police officer came down and gave us the drill instructor routine. Welcome to the Dirksen Senate Office Building, citizens! I assume you are here to attend the hearing at 3:30 on Senate Bill 696. Is that correct? Yes, officer, it is. Very good. The This is a Senate office building. You will remain a quiet. You will remain quiet while standing in line for this hearing. I will note to you that this is called line standing, not wall leaning. You will stand at all times. You will not lean against the wall. You will not sit down. Federal law states that should you sit down outside this hearing, you will be deemed to be engaging in a protest, and you will be arrested and transported to central holding forthwith. Jesus. So, yeah, we were impressed. And therefore, we stood and stood. We stood there for 3.5 hours, 4.5 hours, really, when you get right down to it. Because among, well, not among other reasons, the reason. When the Senate finally decides to pay attention to Appalachian people and Appalachian concerns and hold a hearing and act like Appalachian people are really Americans too, you don't want to miss it. Yeah, John Fox, it was that guy. Is that a pledge pin on your uniform? Yeah, really. Thank you, sir. May I have another? I don't know, but I've been told Capitol Police is mighty cold. So we stood. Because we wanted into this hearing. And before he left, our drill instructor from the Capitol Police said, "Now this is just personally for me. But I need to know it, because it'll make things a little easier for me. Anybody here planning on getting arrested?" To which there were a couple of, "Oh, hell knows!" And I said, "We've been waiting a generation for this. Ain't nobody wants to miss a minute of it." Now, the group that's coming behind us, the people, the friends of coal, or whatever they're calling themselves these days, now, we had a little rally last week, and that's a violent lot. They're trouble. But I mean, we're sitting here, we're standing here, we're dressed well, we're acting like somebody. We brought our manners with us all the way from the hills, from Tennessee and Kentucky and Virginia and West Virginia. We do yes sir and no sir and yes ma'am and no ma'am, because that's how we's raised, because we's raised right. But that other bunch, them coal people, they scream and cuss and carry on, and I wouldn't trust them with a dead skunk, officer. I see. So he went away. Shortly thereafter, he was replaced by another duty officer. And, you know, we're just standing there, hanging out, being quiet, respectful, talking amongst ourselves, taking pictures and shooting a little video and so forth. And the new officer walks over to me. Don't know why I got singled out. And, you know, an old white-haired dude in a suit. I don't know. Maybe I just look non-threatening. And he said, so what are you people about? Oh, dear, don't ever ask me that question. Not in conjunction with mountaintop removal. Don't open that door on me. But he did. And I went in missionary mode. Not missionary position, but missionary mode. And I did some witnessing. "Officer, how would you like it?" I said, "You got youngins?" "Yeah." "How would you like it if your youngins were subjected to toxic waste every day of their lives and they didn't have any say in it?" "I wouldn't like it." "How would you like it if the foundation of your home rocked every day from 3 million pounds of high explosives, officer. How would you like that? Wouldn't like it. How would you like it if poisonous dust and the particulate aerosol matter of high explosives wafted down over your home for you and your loved ones and your neighbors and friends to breathe every day, officer? How would you like it? I wouldn't like it. Well, that's why we're here, officer. Because that's what gets done to Appalachian people every day. That's what mountaintop removal does to human beings who happen to be Appalachian human beings. And, officer, we aim to stop it. And that's what this hearing is about, what it does to our water, what it does to our lives, what it does to our homes and our loved ones, officer. That's what this is about. And that's why you see people standing here as quietly and peacefully as they are, praying that finally the day has come when we will be able to glimpse the first shining ridges of the promised land. Land we've lived on for 9 and 10 and 11 generations and more, that was ours before it was the coal companies and belonged to the first peoples before it was ours and whose blood runs in our veins. We've been brutalized by the coal companies for over 100 years and we've had enough. And we're hoping that Senators Cardin and Alexander, having heard our pleas, will press this bill and help get it signed into law. So that's why we're here, officer. That's why we're here. And we will be as peaceful as congregants in church. But that bunch coming after, different officer, remember. They're trouble. They're big trouble. They attacked us and beat on folks. Last week. And I wouldn't be surprised if they did it again. I'd keep a close eye on them if I were you, officer. And bear in mind, this is the hearing is at 3:30. This is all going on between, 11:30, 12, and 3. And we hadn't seen a sign number one of the first Fokker yet. We'd been told. We'd been told that they were on their way. That they had rented 5 buses. And they were coming to Washington to save their jobs. We'd also gotten wind of what their itinerary was, and it planned for them to arrive in D.C. And park the buses at Union Station, which is about 2 blocks from Dirksen. And according to the itinerary, have time for a little bit of lunch in Union Station, and then a little bit of sightseeing on Capitol Hill, after which we'll all go to the hearing. And apparently that's what they did. They gathered together in places like Logan and Madison, Charleston, and left West Virginia at 5 or 6 in the morning, rode coal company bought and paid for big old buses, and I guess sang coal songs or something, never mind. All the way to D.C., and they had their lunch at Union Station, and they did a little sightseeing around Capitol Hill. And then about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, they sauntered into the Dirksen Senate office building, expecting to be swept into the hearing room like the Queen of the May. Only they didn't. The hearing room had the subcommittee room. Subcommittee room had seats for about 70 people. There were about 75 of us. before the first Fokker had a chance to get in the door. They came in. You know, I told you about how Agnes was in a pretty summer dress and the girls were in skirts and cool summer tops, looking respectable. Ferg was in his khakis and a white dress shirt with a necktie tied, learning to tie them for himself. But when a right-handed guy tries to teach a left-handed guy how to tie a necktie, I think I'm going to have to find a lefty friend to help Ferg out with that. I mean left-handed, not political. Well, okay, it's all right if they're politically lefty, too. But anyway, looking nice. We're all looking. And that's all of us. Not just my family. All of us. Well-dressed. Tastefully dressed. Poor people. This is, after all, a poor people's movement. And we were all dressed respectfully. So imagine my surprise when the Fokkers came wandering in with their big old fat hairy arms hanging out of T-shirts that they'd ripped the sleeves off of, wearing ratty cut-off blue jeans and flip-flops. I happened to ride, I went down to the cafeteria to get bottles of water for my family and happened to ride back up with some Fokkers who had their UMWA hats on in the house. And walked back to my place in line, brought water and everything for Margie and Ferg and Agnes and Doodle. Turned to my officer buddy and I said, I'll tell you what, officer. I see you don't have your hat on. You've got one that's issued by the law enforcement organization. He said, we don't wear them in the building. I said, I know you don't, just the ladies. That's right. I said, well, I just rode up with some. I just rode up with some coal people. And I said, you know, I just want you to know that they are not representative of where we come from. We's raised right. We know to take our hats off in the house. You know, I remember the first time that Bear Bryant coached a football game, a bowl game, down in the Superdome in New Orleans. He had that signature trademark houndstooth hat. And he wasn't wearing it on the sidelines. And whoever the sideline reporter was, maybe it was Keith Jackson, said to Coach Bryant, where's your hat? And Bear looked up at the roof. And then that growl of his, he said, Mama always told me not to wear a hat in the house. Don't wear a hat in the house. So our new officer got the opportunity to go down and give the drill sergeant response to the Friends of Coal. And he wasn't friendly with them. I'm here to tell you, he said, that this is an office building and you will remain quiet and you will stand in line. And you will take those hats off. This is the Senate of the United States of America and you will remove your hats in this building. Show a little respect. It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing. And finally, the doors opened. There was no mad rush for the door. It was all quite orderly. We were all very well behaved. We're well behaved people. What do you want? And we began to file into the hearing room, two and three at a time, getting seats. Until there was finally no more of us, but maybe four or five. And the Fokkers were finally at the head of the line where they were informed, we're sorry. There's no more room for you. The room is full. We have an overflow room set up for you where you can go and watch the hearing on television in the Russell Senate office building adjacent to this building. And there were cries of, but we RSVP'd! We're coal families! We need to be in the hearing! And I heard someone say, well, these people got here early and stood in line, and their feet are sore, and they're tired, and they wanted to be in the hearing a little bit worse than you did. No Fockers in the hearing. They were shut out. And that in itself was satisfying. They are, however, already bellyaching about it. Bellyaching is what Fockers do best, in case you were wondering. The article in today's Williamson Intelligencer or some such, Williamson Daily News, there it is. The article was left to be written by that newspaper's sports editor. A fellow by the name of Jeffrey Reynolds. A caravan organized. Oh, here's the fun part. I was about to leave this out, and I can't leave this out because this is precious. This just goes to show the hubris and the special privileged class that the Fockers have assigned to themselves. Before they even left Charleston, the Fockers issued a press release. That press release said, on Thursday, June the 25th, 2009, more than 300 families of coal miners packed a Senate hearing room to let senators know that they will not sit idly by and have their jobs taken away. The only problem was, like coal itself, that was a dirty lie. So instead, it's left to the sports editor of the Williamson Daily News to write the following. A caravan organized by Citizens for Coal director Roger Horton. And again, what is it with these people all showing up in the same T-shirt? They're like army ants. They're so authoritarianly bound. They all show up in white T-shirts that says, Coalfield Citizen, or Citizens for Coal, or some silliness. Looked like they'd been printed in a mad rush, and like I said, some of them had already had the sleeves ripped off, so hairy tattooed flab-encrusted arms could hang out of them, and armpit hair could be on display for all to see, because that's terribly, terribly manly. A caravan organized by Citizens for Coal director Roger Horton left from Fountain Place Mall in Logan in order to attend Thursday's U.S. Senate subcommittee hearing on Senate Bill 696, better known as the Appalachian Restoration Act. Bill 696, introduced by the subcommittee's chair, Senator Benjamin L. Cardin, D. Maryland, and Senator Lamar Alexander, R. Tennessee, would amend the current Federal Water Pollution Control Act, would change the existing definition of fill material to, quote, any pollutant that replaces a portion of the waters of the United States with dry land or modifies the bottom elevation of a body of water for any purpose, unquote. Note to the editorial staff of the Williamson Daily News, the period comes before the close quote, just saying. In short, the bill, if passed into law, would ban coal mining companies from practicing mountaintop removal mining. Practicing? It sounds like they've made a religion of it, doesn't it? Because it would prevent the establishment of what is commonly known as valley fills. The hearing was entitled The Impacts of Mountaintop Removal Coal Mining on Water Quality in Appalachia. We thought it would be beneficial for the members of the U.S. Senate, President Obama, and the radicals who want to take away jobs from our families and our region to see the faces of the people they are hurting. Citizens for Coal Director Roger Horton said Thursday, today is the start of a long fight, but it's worth it. While the miners of the coal caravan? Lo, we have seen a lump of coal in the east, and we are come to worship it. Yeah, what? While the miners of the coal caravan traveled hours to let their voices be heard and their numbers be seen by the committee, many of the coal supporters, many of the coal supporters, can you imagine supporting coal instead of human beings? Yeah. Many of the coal supporters were not able to enter the subcommittee room due to it holding only 80 people. No, damn it, no! They weren't able to enter the hearing room because they're a bunch of lazy sods who think that they're some sort of privileged babies from the coal fields who were too damn lazy to get there and want it like we wanted it. Just saying. Of the over 500 in attendance at the meeting, no, there weren't. I saw the hallways. They wouldn't know 500. Just over 300 were members of Horton's group. Nearly 150 traveled on the buses, and another 150 to 170 traveled by car or plane. What, no boats? To the nation's capital for the hearing. While Horton and many of his fellow miners were able to get into the hearing room, wrong, not, a great number of them were forced to watch the hearing via closed circuit in an overflow room. That's right, they wasted gallons and gallons and gallons of diesel fuel and thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars to drive to Washington, D.C. and watch it on TV just like they could have at home. Those in the overflow room were then forced to miss part of the hearing when they were required to move to yet another overflow room when the first one had a scheduling conflict with another committee. We anticipated a large number of attendees, and we could not secure other chambers for the hearing for the first overflow, and the first overflow room belongs to another committee, Subcommittee General Counsel Allison Cook told the obviously frustrated coal supporters. We apologize, but we did the best we could with a larger-than-expected crowd.
I think it is a shame that we've traveled all this distance and then have been treated in such a fashion,
Williamson Middle School principal and Cedar Coal Study Unit Manager Helen Curry told Cook.
There wasn't more than 15 or 20 minutes left in the hearing, and for them to make us move to another building for that small amount of time demonstrates how little we were wanted here.
No, lady! It demonstrates how little you prepared! It demonstrates how much you think that you're the queen of the May. That you think that the world ought to bow down to you because you blow mountains up and poison people's children and ruin their waters. How special that makes you, some sort of neo-Calvinistic elect in the eyes of the Almighty. Well, I'm here to tell you, what's your name again? The Williamson Middle School Principal and Cedar Coal Study Unit Manager Helen Curry. I'm here to tell you, you ain't! And by the way, do you know what Cedar is? I think it stands for something like Coal Education, Development, and Resources. It's a nasty little piece of propaganda that the Fockers have snuck into the public schools and some private ones in West Virginia in order to indoctrinate innocent fourth graders and so forth into how good coal is for West Virginia. Meanwhile, there is no competing, educational unit to teach children what that stuff is really doing to them. Little Johnny, you got a B in math last year. Guess what? If your mother hadn't been ingesting mercury because of coal being burned in this country, you might have gotten an A because you'd be 10 IQ points smarter than you are. How's that, little Johnny?
Willie Horton, what's his name? Roger Horton. Roger Horton said,
they were told we were coming. They knew how many were to be here, and these people were given the run around. Those of us in the hearing room weren't aware the others were being run here and there. That's just the way they try and discourage us. But we made an impact. They knew we were here, and they know we're not going away, and we'll be back.
Well, Willie, we'll be back, too. I mean, Roger. The Senate subcommittee heard from two panels of witnesses. Panel one consisted of only one witness, John Pomponio, the Director of Environmental Assessment and Innovation Division, EAID, of Region 3 of the United States Environmental Protection Agency. Pomponio testified to the subcommittees that the third district of his agency had not done a very good job of determining the full effects of stream mitigation due to the mountaintop removal process. We need to do a better job in the third district on monitoring mitigation. That means that in the last 8 years of the Bush administration, a blind eye was turned to whatever it was, whatever filth it was that the coal industry wanted to pump into our groundwater, into our streams, into our air, and into our very bodies themselves. In other words, the EPA was told to look the other way. He also testified that, quote, despite regulatory reviews and the addition of measures and permits to minimize environmental impacts from surface coal mining, many unintended and well-documented environmental consequences continue to occur from mining operations. In other words, they continue to poison us. Panel 2 consisted of Paul Sloan, the Deputy Commissioner of the Tennessee Department of Environment and Conservation, Randy Huffman, the Cabinet Secretary of the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection, Maria Gano, you know Maria, organizer of the Ohio and Valley Environmental Coalition. Notice they do not mention in the Williamson Daily News that she is the 2009 winner of the Goldman Environmental Prize, the Environmental Nobel. No, they can't do that. This is a filthy propaganda rag run by Cole. It is not anything resembling a guardian of the Fourth Estate. And Dr. Margaret Palmer, the laboratory director of the Chesapeake Biological Laboratory at the University of Maryland Center for Environmental Sciences. Gano testified that coal was, in essence, not worth the destruction that it brings to the natural placement of the mountains. Quote, the energy is temporary energy. You only burn coal one time. The destruction of the land, air, communities, and people is permanent. We can live without energy. We can't live without clean water. She also told the committee that there were only 15,000 coal miners employed in West Virginia now as opposed to 150,000 in 1950. Actually, that was 1980. I'm talking about actual miners, she said. I'm not talking about office staff and people who don't actually mine the coal. She went on to say the mountain summits that are removed to reach the coal may not have the same shape or height they previously did. The streams that are buried when rocks and dirt are dumped over the side of the mountain into the valleys below are gone forever, and there is no evidence to date that mitigation actions can compensate for the lost natural resources and ecological functions of the headwater streams that are buried. That was Dr. Palmer, Dr. Margaret Palmer. Further, water quality impacts from the mining and valley fills permeate downstream such that many streams not directly touched by the mining activities are biologically impaired. Now, here's where the Fockers have a lot of fun, because Dr. Palmer is concerned, and see, since I'm talking to a liberal, progressive, decent human being audience, you will get this. Dr. Palmer is concerned about the mayfly population. How is that described in the Williamson Daily News propaganda piece? Palmer also said that the valley fills were eliminating a species of flies from the Appalachian area. You can almost hear the sarcasm. Flies! Flies! Yeah.
In West Virginia, court actions have stopped surface mine permits. One argument centers around what happens to bugs when valley fills are constructed. Miss Bug, is coal mining a hardship for you?
Heck no! The valley fills make great homes for us bugs.
What about streams?
When the rain falls, the water flows just fine for my family.
So there you have it. That's the bug's eye view of this issue.
Can we talk about car windshields now?
Yeah, see, car windshields kill more bugs than valley. No, not really. She said a group of insects well known to those who love to fly fish are the mayflies. They're considered good indicators of water quality because they are not very tolerant to pollution. The number of species of mayflies you find in streams declines as mayflies you find in streams declines as pollution increases. That's okay. The Friends of Coal have an animated bug instead.
Coal's opponents use the courts and bug habitats to attack West Virginia's coal economy. So, Mr. Bug, how's the water in your woods?
Water's fine. My family moved on the valley fill as soon as we heard about the beautiful reclamation the coal miners built.
But the court ruling stopped coal mining because you couldn't live there.
Temporary, my dear. We just moved during construction.
So your homes aren't endangered?
Creepers, no. And you know what? I don't need electricity in my home. Do you?
Lion bastards. You realize we could stop mountaintop removal tomorrow and nobody's lights would even so much as dim? Mountaintop removal coal only accounts for about 5 to 7% of the electricity usage in the United States as it is. We could replace that almost instantaneously with wind and solar and more. But that's okay. The Coal Association is more than happy to lie with computer CGI bugs complaining about windshields and talking about not needing electricity. And there was one last witness. Actually, he went first after Mr. Pomponio, and that was Randy Huffman. Randy Huffman is the cabinet secretary of the Department of Environmental Pollution in West Virginia. Protection. See, I can't lie. And he said right off the bat, I'm not here to support mountaintop removal. And then that's exactly what he did. And, you know, he had no credibility whatsoever. He said things like, mining through streams, hard rock surface mining, and development activities could warrant the same scrutiny that is being given to the use of valley fills. There are many surface mines requiring valley fills that are not mountaintop removal mines by definition. The Clean Water Act and West Virginia's Water Enforcement Program require the same levels of protection for all mining activity. The only problem is the West Virginia Department of Environmental Permitting, protection, has no intent on enforcing any laws whatsoever. They are a rubber stamp. They are, in fact, a failed agency that should be taken over by the Department of Interior and the Environmental Protection Agency. And the whole lot of them kicked out on the street because they're useless. Useless as a kickstand on a tank or a screen door on a submarine or teats on a boar hog. They're useless. And then, James Milam is a mining supply outlet manager in Logan. Come on down to the mining supply outlet. We got overstocked mining supplies in the mining supply outlet. What? That price is up to 40% off. Get yourself a D9. Never mind. He said, I think it's a shame that they hear presentations from these radicals and can't take the time to hear what we have to say. Our families deserve better. Allison Cook, who was the counsel for the subcommittee, said, obviously these panels today were rather one-sided. If you let us know that you want to speak in future hearings, I'm sure the subcommittee and Chairman Cardin will try to accommodate your group. Well, yeah, sure, if you show up. If you don't come swanning down the halls of the Dirksen Senate office building like you wanted a hand-engraved edible invitation in order to show, sure they will. Maybe if you show up in something besides ratty-ass cut-off jeans and some the mass-produced stamped-on T-shirts with the arms ripped off, you know, a little bit of respect is called for. And then there's Chris Hamilton, who is a guy, but spends most of his time on his knees in front of the coal industry. He's chairman of the Coalition for Mountaintop Mining. He said, the logic and basis behind this legislation is mean-spirited and is squarely aimed at eliminating mining jobs in West Virginia and throughout Appalachia. This legislation, coupled with onerous cap-and-trade initiatives and increased EPA controls, are cause for this united action of coal supporters. What? What kind of united action is showing up late for a hearing? Woohoo! Well, I tell you, you sure showed us, Chris. Doofus. And then, finally, Roger Horton, said, you made an impact today, so don't get frustrated. They know they've got opposition now. It takes time, but we will succeed. Yeah, sure you will. We're going to beat you, Roger. We're going to beat you like you owe us money. We're going to end mountaintop removal. And in the bargain, we're going to make it possible for maybe your grandkids to have a halfway decent life. Instead of one that's filled with poisons and toxins and blasting. But then again, Roger, you don't live near any of this, do you, Roger? So then, we did sit in the hearing. And I want to share something with you. Because this goes to the very heart of what it means to be a part of the Horn family. We're going to do a little time traveling. I read this on air, but it bears repeating. Because in the portion of the hearing in which Senator Lamar Alexander, and I'm a big believer in giving credit where credit is due, Senator Lamar Alexander is a Republican, but he is also a co-sponsor of Senate 696. And it was at his behest that Tennessee Governor Phil Bredesen sent his environmental official to testify at this hearing. And Mr. Sloan, the environmental official, was unequivocal in saying that Tennessee does not permit valley fills, nor does it plan on permitting valley fills, nor does it desire valley fills, and would be just fine with Tennessee if valley fills were illegal everywhere else, too. Because they're terrible. They're awful. And in the course of the exchange between Senator Alexander and Senator and Mr. Sloan, he said, "And we don't have any valley fills in Tennessee." "No, Senator, no." "Well, that's good, because you know the four counties that produce coal in Tennessee are four of the poorest counties in Tennessee." In our Cumberland Mountains. But they are beginning to develop a tourism economy. And that's beginning to bring a little bit of prosperity to those four counties. Now, it's not too far from them four counties down to Booger Holler, where Miss Dolly's from. And we understand in Tennessee the value of tourism. So I'm glad we don't have valley fills in Tennessee. And now, yes, Sherman, set the Wayback Machine, please. Set the Wayback Machine for March of this year, if you please. Set the Wayback Machine for March the 25th at 5:58 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And you will see an email roll into my inbox during the program from one of Senator Alexander's constituents, our good friend David from Middle Tennessee. And David wrote, "If..." And it is a big if. "If there is such a thing as a good repig-licking, Lamar is one. He buddies up just enough to that hideous repig base so as not to piss him off." Now, truth be told, that's Lamar responding to his base. "The tourism lobby from here is bigger than is the coal lobby. Even at the state level, repig's deaf and uncaring about other things that matter to you and I listen to that tourism lobby. Short version. Listen here, Percy. I ain't no tree hugger, but them Ohio dollars ain't gonna drive by no Scott Top Mountain to get to Dollywood. Now get this stuff about blowing up the Smokies roped in, tied down. See, if you want to know what the news is gonna be, you listen to the horn. If you want to know what the news was, you listen to the for-profit media. Ain't no Ohio dollars going to drive by no Skunk Top Mountain to get to Dollywood. And that is exactly what Lamar Alexander said on June the 25th, 2009, at somewhere around 3:45 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Now, I want to tell you that one of those four counties, this was a beautiful moment, one of those four coal mining counties in West Virginia, Senator Alexander said, is 80% Republican. You know what their number one issue is in that county? Clean air. And I don't know if a smile makes a sound or not, but at that moment in time, it sure did sound like it does. Because there was a bunch of smiles in that hearing room. A bunch of smiles. A bunch of smiles. They get it. You get it. This is what happens when you pay attention. This is what happens when you have a diversified economy. This is what happens when your economy is not entirely and wholly controlled by out-of-state corporations who don't give a damn what they do to your state, as long as they get their holy profit. I was right proud of Senator Alexander, and I hope he sticks to his guns. Now, what was particularly interesting as well was that before the hearing got fully underway, Senator James Inhofe, whom our good friend Bart Kopp refers to as Senator Pissquick, made an unscheduled appearance in the hearing. He's not even a member of the subcommittee. But he made sure that he wanted to go on the record and make everybody understand that he was a friend of coal. And he didn't give a rat's rear end. What happened to children in Appalachia? Coal was king. Of course, this is a man who has called environmentalists Nazis, has referred to global warming as a giant hoax, and who is among the greatest detriments to any hope for a future that this country may have. But he had work to do to earn them bags of money that he gets from the coal industry. So that's my little story of the trip to D.C. And I'm sure we'll have more stories to tell. A question. Have you made it abundantly clear to your senator that you expect them to sign on and co-sponsor S-696, the Appalachian Restoration Act? Have you done that? The well-being of children here where I live depends on your activism. Because, you see, placating the wounded pride of the Fockers was a little fellow by the name of Pat Bond. He's the environmental aide to Senator Rockefeller, who came to pat their little heads and hold their little hands when they didn't get squired into the hearing as if they were some sort of royalty. He was there. He was the one who looked at my daughter with steely, uncaring eyes when she began to weep in a meeting at Rockefeller's office as she described the effects on her home of mountain removal and explained to us that there was nothing in heaven or earth or hell itself that would make Jay Rockefeller ever, ever stand up for people in West Virginia who object to being daily poisoned. He was there, and it was clear where he stood. So we're not going to get any help from our West Virginia congressional delegation. There were people in Washington, D.C. who actually thought that Representative Nick Joe Rahal would vote for the climate change bill. Now, we can talk about that bill itself until hell freezes over. It's a piece of weak-kneed excrement that does not do anything that needs to be done in this country and does a lot that doesn't need to be done. $60 billion worth of coal welfare. Right down the toilet, your money, thrown away on a chase after the philosopher's stone or the universal solvent. Nothing but carnival, sideshow, hucksterism, alchemy. $60 billion gone like that. $60 billion that, by the way, could have gone a long way toward, oh, I don't know, helping to create a public option health care plan. I'm sorry, but I think the health of the American people and well-being of the American people and their ability to get to the doctor when they're sick is a little bit more important than funding another one of Don Blankenship's goddamn trips to the Riviera. But that's me, and I'm crazy. I have not mentioned my appreciation for Senator Cardin. He asked questions of Randy Huffman that made it abundantly clear to those who had ears to hear that Randy Huffman is nothing more than a fool and a pathetic shill for the industry that is destroying West Virginia. When put in stark comparison with Dr. Palmer, with Maria Gano, with Mr. Sloan, and Mr. Pomponio, it became abundantly evident that Randy Huffman has one marching order, and that is serve coal. Do it always. And he looked like the fool that he is. And so my thanks to Senator Cardin, whom I went up and thanked personally on behalf of my family for the hearing. My public thanks to him now. So that's our little trip to Washington, D.C. We survived the Bates Motel. Made it back intact. Kind of took the long way home over U.S. 33 through Pendleton County, West Virginia, and down into Randolph County, West Virginia, so we could get a good look at mountains as they're supposed to be, and communities not ravaged by mountain removal. It can be that way in southern West Virginia, too, if we will only work for it. And we in West Virginia will work for it, but we desperately need your help. I'm so glad to be back. I miss those 3 days. Thank you again to John Fox for picking up my slack in those 3 days. He did a great job, and I hope you enjoyed his work. And if you did, then for heaven's sakes, pile into the chat room and tune in on any given Sunday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern, because he's going to be there, all foxed up. Our chief engineer, our chief musician, and a damned fine talk host into the bargain. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is activist radio. This is talking the talk and walking the walk. This is the horn.
Kissed my mother at I just whispered, Mother dear, where is Mary? She's not here. The world grew dark and sadness came to me. She just pointed to the spot in that little churchyard lot where Mary sleeps in sunny Tennessee. You could hear the children singing as she bid farewell to me. Far across those fields of cotton, my old homestead I could see. As the moon rose in its glory, then I told my saddest story to that girl I left in sunny Tennessee.
Second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Well, see, that's what happens when you're working with a machine that just came online in the last few hours. Yeah, there's some imaging stuff that has to be refixed, and that causes a little bit of dead air. My apologies. But, you know, this is live. This isn't canned. This isn't some pre-recorded piece of perfection. And things happen when you're going live. That's my excuse, and I'm sticking to it. Let us go forthwith to the phones and see what's happening out there. Well, nothing's happening out there. How about that? Well, you know what the phone number is anyway. 877-443-2366, 877-4-HEAD-ON. If you've got some sort of unlimited long-distance dialing program, you can always use 304-658-3333. If you hear phones ringing in the background, which you ought not, I acknowledge, that's because we're trying to figure out how the other handset works. Yeah. And by the way, just for the sake of noting it, the big Bring Your Gun to Church Day affair did go down this weekend. Yeah, 200 or so gun-toting Christians showed up at the New Bethel Church, somewhere near Louisville, Kentucky. And they celebrated their rights as Americans by bringing guns to the house of the Prince of Peace. Had a dollar raffle of a handgun. They had firearm safety lessons, and they had a picnic dinner on the ground. Oh, glory. The pastor there is Ken Pagano. That's Pagan with an O for those of you paying attention, P-A-G-A-N-O. Yes, and I would submit that he isn't far from it, because there ain't nothing Christian about bringing your gun to church. He came up with the idea, by the way, and this was a quote from him. After some church members expressed concern about members of President Barack Obama administration's views on gun control,
So, yeah, bring your gun to church. I wonder what the lesson was from. I'm thinking it was from the 32nd chapter of Deuteronomy, in which Eliphaz the just... Well, here, let me just get it up and read it. Deuteronomy, chapter 32, verse 1. And Eliphaz the just did give a steely-eyed glare unto the goat herder, as Eliphaz the just did throw down a handgun into the dirt. Said Eliphaz the just unto the goat herder, pick up the gun. Pick it up. Said Eliphaz the just. And yea, verily did the goat herder look unto the steely eyes of Eliphaz the just and say, Mister, I don't want no trouble. Pick it up. Pick up the gun. And the goat herder, who was not loved by God Almighty, for he was a Canaanite, did stand shaking in his sandals, as Eliphaz the just again said, pick up the gun, pick it up, and did glare steely-eyed unto the young Canaanite goat herder once more. For the Lord God doth love firearms and the slaughter of Canaanite goat herders. And yea, verily did the Canaanite goat herder look unto Eliphaz the well armed and say, Mister, I just came to get some cloth for my wife. And Eliphaz the just did say, pick up the gun, pick it up. And yea, verily the Canaanite goat herder did reach down for the gun, at which point Eliphaz the just and steely-eyed did scatter his brains all over Canaan with a shot to the head. And then did Eliphaz the just look about him to the righteous congregation of gun owners and gun supporters and say, you all seen. He had a gun. Yea, verily, here endeth the lesson. Hallelujah. Praise Jesus for firearms. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Praise the Lord.
Brother
praise
Albert.
He had a gun. Yep.
I'm sorry. I love Shane. Come back, and Shane.
When you can mix Bill Hicks and Shane, you're in heaven. That's how I look at it. Well,
I'm a thief. I know it. But the Eliphaz the just, that's all mine.
Absolutely. Wow. It was wonderful. It was wonderful, and it's true. You know, these guys are not... they just become more and more insignificant in their freakdom, don't they?
They get weirder by the minute.
Seriously, it's just unbelievable. You didn't happen to get any pictures of them sleeveless t-shirt wearers, did you?
Well, as a matter of fact, it's interesting you should ask. Oh, by the way, I've been told that I screwed up my Bible citation. There are those out there who know Holy Scripture far better than I do, and I am told by David in Tennessee that it came from 2 Glossolalians, 3rd chapter, verses 5 through 8.
Ah, spaghetti and meatballs. I like that part, too.
Glossolalians. That's a beautiful thing. You guys work on the fly, and you're awesome. We do things here that cost the Daily Show millions of dollars every year. Ain't it amazing, Albert?
Yeah, well, they get paid millions of dollars, so what do you want?
No, I was going to say it's interesting that you should ask. If for those who would like to see pictures, and there is one in this slideshow, you can go to climategroundzero.org. It should be the top post. Senate hearings on mountaintop removal, coal mining, and water quality in Appalachia. Antrim Caskey shot these photos. And the third one in, you can see one of those arms, one of those tattooed, hairy arms, hanging out of a brand-new, fresh Friends of Coal T-shirt that's done had the arms ripped right off. And he's also wearing the ratty cut-off blue jean shorts.
Nice. You have to have that. Yeah, you have to have that. Do they have the little beer helmet on, too? Or?
Sadly, no. No, just a ball cap in the house. Apparently, this was before the speech was made.
Boy, it never ends. You know, I was thinking in the chat room as you were describing the event, the way that they come to it and the way they approach it, like it's, you know, Monday night rehabilitation or something. And it just... I don't know where they think they're going and what they think they're doing and how they think, you know, behaving and acting in ways such as that, you know, will enable their, you know, their little fake baloney reality that they want. You know, they want to destroy the world and, you know, suck every piece of marrow out of it. And I don't know, you know, it just, you know, I think, you know, here, at least myself, that's just one of those mindsets I just can't really, really wrap my head around. It's like a serial killer or a child rapist, or it's just like one of those things when I hear people talking about how, you know, that bug commercials, I gagged. That was horrible. What the hell is that? You guys have to endure that? You guys put up with that?
Oh, they run that kind of crap on the TV and the radio here all the time.
But the bugs are, no, listen, you know, that, and that's the thing. It's like, you know, I don't like mosquitoes. I don't like flies. I hate flies. I mean, the sight of maggots in anything is just, ugh.
Yeah, remember, there are people having dinner at this hour.
I apologize, everyone. But here's the thing. This is the antacid. This is the Alka-Seltzer for me, is I realize that, yeah, flies are disgusting, but they do.
We're not talking about house flies. We're not talking about them bottle flies, and you know where they come from. We're talking about mayflies. Sweet little mayflies that hatch above the river, and the happy little trout jump out of the water and have them for supper, and the next thing you know, you're having a rainbow trout on a plate, and he's real tasty.
Oh, yeah. Eat. How's that bug taste?
Yeah. I mean, that's some good bug.
Yeah. It is some good bug, and, you know, that's kind of the point, though. They talk about it like flies, you know, like as a house fly or any kind of thing like that. You know,
them radical environmentalists, they just worried about flies more than they worried about people's jobs.
Yeah. Yeah, I am. I'm more worried about phytoplanktons and algaes and things like that than I am about somebody's stupid job that just makes the world look hideous and dumps toxins all over the place. I am, because, you know, even whales don't eat everything. You know, the top of the food chain, which is where we sit, well, we sit, and underneath us is the bottom of the food chain. And if the food chain or the pyramid or whatever you want, however you want, the web, however you want to talk about it, you know, if that goes out from under us, where do we go? You know, the bigger we are, the harder we fall. And I don't understand why these troglodytes can't understand this. I don't understand why it's inconceivable. It literally is just inconceivable to me. I don't understand why they miss such a fundamental aspect of reality. It's just unbelievable.
Well, there's none so blind as those who will not see, Albert.
To do things that are better. It's just better to do things this way. You know, I like solar and geothermal and wind and everything. I mean, they don't even want to do research into anything. They feel threatened by it. You know, I mean, well, I don't know. I don't know why we, you know, I hope we're not. I don't think we are. I think we as a population are seeing them for what they are. And I don't know. I just can't conceive of anything. We had this cap and trade bill passed, didn't it pass or something like that? One of these environmental bills.
Yeah, well, yeah, the Markey Waxman was
talking about
ACES, the ACES bill. Yeah, that was passed.
And, you know, I mean, I read these articles on mainstream areas, and, you know, it doesn't, you know, they all have comments, And it makes my heart sit at peace and rest when, you know, the first comment, the second comment, and, you know, the next 100 comments all related to there's no such thing as clean coal. You know, we outnumber them by a sizable margin. And, you know, just like how the, you know, Fiji, you know, cannibals had to stop eating, you know, other people, you know, well, and start eating pineapple. Well, I think that's where we're looking at. You know, they have Kuru, and, you know, or
well, but yeah, danger, look, I mean, and that's, but that's,
that. And, you know,
but Albert,
they're just a very small minority.
That's the problem here. That's
in my opinion.
That's the problem here, Albert, is that they have cast this, the Fockers have, in a light of, well, we're trying to take my jobs. Well, we're not trying to take anybody's jobs. There's jobs for a damn generation.
Nice talking to you, Bob. If you can't hear me, if I can't hear you, what have you, but
no, rats. Ah. Apparently Albert couldn't hear me. I could hear him. You could hear him. Oh, please, God. Not a $1,000 repair problem. Not now, please. Please, Flying Spaghetti Monster, make it all work. Rat fart. But no, what Albert was saying, you know, they painted in terms, we're trying to take our jobs. It goes to show that they're not even listening. You want to put up windmills, and there ain't no jobs in windmills. The only problem being that they don't have to put up windmills. We need federal funding to clean up the coal company's mess. But we have to stop them making the messes first. There is work for a generation for these mountain removers trying to do reclamation right. But the coal companies don't have any interest in doing reclamation right. We will never put back these mountains the way that they were made by the Creator, or God, or Yahweh, or Jehovah, or the Flying Spaghetti Monster, or however you refer to him, her, it, not. We'll never be able to put them back. But we can take seriously the attempt. And we can keep every mountain remover in West Virginia in work, making as good a money as what he was making, with the added bonus of no longer poisoning his or her children, or mine, or ours. It can be done. See, the way it happens is coal companies put up a bond before they start a mountain removal operation. And the bond is pathetic. The bond is pitiful. The bond is not even enough to come close to fulfilling their financial responsibilities at reclamation. So if the coal company shuts down and bugs out and defaults on the bond, well, hell, no big deal. Write it off as a loss at the end of the year on the income taxes, right? Sure. You and me, we're going to get stuck with the coal company's cleanup one way or the other. We might as well get serious about doing it right. We're going to need plant biologists to figure out what it takes to make ginseng a virtual, and the way it grows here in the Appalachians, I think that's Panax. We're going to need a team of biologists to figure out how to make that species of plant that does not like to reproduce in captivity reproduce when it's been planted. We got to find a way to do that. We've got to find a way to make the morel mushrooms come back. We've got to find a way to make the trees actually grow in substances that will not otherwise support life. We have to find a way, in the words of Robert Frost, to build soil. And that's going to take a hell of a lot of hard work, and that's going to take hard work that the coal companies are utterly unwilling to do. It is up to us. But you cannot begin to correct the damage until the people making the damage stop making it. It's that simple. Anybody want to test the phone system? This was disturbing. I don't know if that was on Albert's end or on mine, but if the phones aren't working right, we need to know. Because at least you'll know that you're being heard, even if you can't hear me. Both sides are going out. Never a dull moment. Never a dull moment. And it hasn't been dull while I've been gone. Somebody's going to put a rock through a window when I mention this, but I'm going to. Because we had one of those little teaching moments when we when we got back to the Bates Motel on Thursday evening and learned that Michael Jackson had died. It was very sad. And my kids, most notably my jaded at 13 son, was making jokes about Michael Jackson, and I stopped him in his tracks. And I said, "Boy, you listen, and you listen good. That human being was exploited and used from the moment that he emerged from the womb. He never got, he may have been richer than Croesus at one point, but he never got a chance to be a kid. He never got a chance to be normal. His quest for some sort of self-identity was circumscribed in plastic surgery and a constant flight from reality so that he built the world's biggest playground on his mansion estates. I said, "Son, he has my pity and has had it for a long time. He had a certain genius as a performer, entertained a lot of people, and had a lot of troubles. But I'll brook no joking. So that's my take on Michael Jackson. It's just damn sad. Elvis, part two, you know? Yeah. Okay, let's find out if the phones are working. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's John. You hearing me? Because I'm hearing you.
I got you, John, so okay, hallelujah, it works.
Yeah. On your thing about Michael not being, having a chance to be a kid, just another example of a family using a child as a commodity and then the industry taking over later and trying to prop him up to just constantly pump money into a system. And it is a tragedy. And it's too bad that such an artist got turned out to be a bit of a joke by, you know, just the manipulation that went down. I mean, and understanding why his marriage to Lisa Marie was so short-lived. He was afraid he was going to end up just like Elvis, and she couldn't watch it from that close.
And it's
exactly,
yeah, it's sad, isn't it? I mean, this is Richard Corey all over again, you know. And Richard Corey went home last night and put a bullet in his head. Listen, and I'm not telling you anything. Human exploitation is human exploitation, regardless of whether or not you are paid millions for it, or whether you are paid table scraps. It has the same earmarks.
Yeah, I mean, and it's funny. The abused becomes the abuser as well, in a way, because he was one of the biggest media manipulators of all time himself. And I think it just ends up being an unfortunate cycle, in a way. You know, even though his manipulation wasn't a destructive thing. It was all about, you know, David and I had a really great conversation about it last week. How, you know, he was obsessed with being number one. Couldn't be anything less than number one, and it was just this absolute obsession. And I, you know, it is tragic. And, you know, I don't want to hang on the subject. We had enough of a bit of a MJ moment last week when I was filling in for you. But you know, this is just the way that it's unfortunately the way of art being turned into industry.
Yeah, and of course, remember that Sony's name is in there somewhere.
Sony's name is always in there somewhere, man. They own it all. But, you know, and no one ever forgets Sony used to be CBS.
Right.
The history of destruction goes back a long, long, long way. And, you know, and it's unfortunate, probably in death, his debts will be paid off and his kids will be set for life. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about, how the touring company in the UK hired the full-time doctor, and the media's all been wanting to go after the touring company. Well, I've got the other side of that situation for you. The touring company is putting up a whole lot of money for a guy who's making a comeback at age 50, whose health has been in question for years. They're going to hire a doctor to make sure that they're keeping their investment in good shape. Now, whether that doctor actually acted properly is a whole other question, whether he enabled him or not. But to actually condemn the touring company, the production company, for hiring the doctor, I think is being a bit knee-jerk.
Yeah, it's yeah.
Any, I don't care who the touring company was. You're bringing somebody back at age 50 to do the kind of show that he would do. That's very physical and very intense and very demanding. They would want to make sure that there was someone there to care for him. Now, what happened down the line? And I'm not saying that they did have the right intentions. But I'm not going to pass judgment on the touring company for hiring a full-time doctor. It's done a lot, and a lot of big acts keep physicians on tour because touring is grueling.
It absolutely is. Touring musicians and baseball players. I've wondered, and I don't care how much money you're getting paid. I've wondered, you know, how it doesn't eat you alive. Because, you know, that constant, well, it catches up with you. And it becomes real easy just to get to the end of the day and say, you know, somebody find me a fifth of brown liquor, I'm done.
Well, and
or a pill or a needle or, you know, whatever.
The other thing that I think isn't thought of enough when it comes to entertainers, you're constantly in a sense of waiting to go out and do the thing that you do, which is really intense. And it's this constant kind of keeping a certain amount of intensity and energy level up for a length of time that the human body's not designed for. And so I think it's one of the things that ends up leading to substance abuse. Because then, like, by the time the show's over, your adrenaline's pumping so much, you might only have 6 hours before you have to travel the next day. You sometimes need something just to be able to sleep and try and regenerate, and it can create a hellish cycle of just physical abuse on your own body. I mean, I know it from my years of touring. You know, you get done at 2-3 a.m. and you got to be in the truck on the road at 7 or 8 in the morning, drive 6 to 10 hours to get to the next gig, and start it all over again.
Oh, that reminds me of something. It's a story I didn't get to tell you, John. It goes back a week or so to that little street fair that we had here at home, where Agnes and I sat at the table passing out literature and stuff. There were two bands, and this would have you were with me, brother. You were with me. You were watching it unfold. Because band one was playing, and, you know, cover band playing rock and roll classics and all of that kind of, you know the genre, and doing it passably well. Well, then the second band pulls up with the big dually pickup truck pulling the humongous humongous trailer of equipment, and it's about an hour before the first band is supposed to stop playing, and it's 4 hours before the second band is supposed to kick off. Well, they pull the truck in, and then they back the truck right up to the corner of the stage to where the guy doing sound and lights can no longer see the band.
Right.
And he had an absolute purple polka-dotted blue screaming hissy on the guy who pulled the truck in. And so the guys in the band said, hey, you know, we can't perform anymore. Our guy can't mix us. Our guy can't see us, can barely hear us. So, hey, thanks, everybody. This was fun. We'd have played another hour, but the professionals have arrived. And they turned off and unplugged and left.
I've seen it happen before. The other version of that I love that you run into in Australia is where they tell you to just set up around the meat raffle.
Around the what? Who?
You know, we've got the meat raffle or the bingo game.
Oh, okay.
And you know, double book. And, you know, sorry, you can't sound check, but just, you know, do it at showtime. If anything, performance is logistics. It's all about logistics. And in a situation like that, at this fair, someone didn't plan for those logistics whatsoever. The big band rocks up, starts doing what they're supposed to do, and I'd almost put money on it that they even would have sent information saying, okay, you know, here's the terms of us coming to perform. We need to have so much time and access before we can play. And someone read that and just kind of went like, they'll cope.
Yeah.
And then it ends up pitting them against the other band. You know, I mean, I've had it plenty of times where when I was still living in San Antonio, every year we used to run a battle of the bands, and the winner of that competition would get to open up for one of the big rock shows at the Sunken Gardens Theater in San Antonio. I remember one year it was Rob Halford's Fight and Anthrax and a couple of the other, you know, really big heavy bands of the time. And, you know, we do this thing, we think we have all the lines of communication right, and I'd always end up running sound for whoever the winner was, and I'd get there and the touring company would know nothing of it. They would have had no chance, aside from the fact that it's inconvenient to begin with, to just suddenly add another local support band on. They've had no chance to make any plans to even slot us in to have, you know, like channels open on a mixer, channels down a multi-core. And I remember, you know, one band, I happened to know one of the monitor guys touring. And he said, look, man, he said, I have two channels for you. The decide what you want to have go through the PA. And I said, hey, man, you still drink Jack Daniels? She goes, oh, yeah. And I went to the band, and I said, pool whatever money you have, go down to the liquor store, go get me two bottles of Jack Daniels, and I can have them back here in 15 minutes, or else you have no chance. And I walked up with this brown paper bag, handed it to him, and I said, hey, what would this get me? And he slides out the two bottles of Jack, and he goes, and he opens up the mic drawer, and he says, I think I can come up with 12 channels.
It works like that. It does indeed.
Yep. Grease the wheels a bit, man. And you know, and at least that made up for the lack of communication. You know, and I sent back to go get an extra multi-core, and we ran it and did all that kind of stuff so that we had half a chance of having this band that, you know, by no fault of their own, was being marginalized. And they ended up going up there and having a great show in front of a crowd the size that they had never seen in front of them. And you don't see quite as much of it anymore because we don't actually get to see touring actual players as much anymore. But that's a whole other subject.
Yeah, although the truckers were there in April.
I've heard some really good reports back, too. I've asked around, and at the Blues Festival, I've heard a whole bunch of people really, really like them.
Awesome. That wasn't their first trip there. They've been there before, so I wouldn't be surprised if they're back again. Hey, John, good talking to you, brother.
All right, man. Take care. Have a great show.
All right, thanks. Later. John Fox calling in from near Sydney. Keeping it rolling. Hey, welcome.
Hey.
Hey, Gene.
Hey, Bob. How's it going?
It's going good. It's apparently working. You're hearing me. I'm hearing you. All is good.
Yeah. Well, I spent the afternoon trying to replace a light bulb. And I'm so anxious. I'm probably here getting over my cold.
That's okay.
But I now I'm at the phase of disposing of a CFL light bulb, so I've sent out some feelers to people I know. Exactly.
Well, that's the nice thing is though, is you're in Oregon, and odds are there is a protocol in place for doing that.
I hope so, but I'm going to have to. Could you use a couple of gently used CFL light bulbs for the bedroom? Because apparently they don't really work too well with lights that are activated by motion sensor.
Oh.
Yeah, it kind of shortens their lifespan a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up getting I did try to save money. I mean energy, because I got a 57 watt bulb instead of a 60. It's about the best I could do. At least for incandescent bulbs. I don't know what I'm going to do for these other five. You know, it would help me a lot to do the, be able to just walk into the room and walk back out without inadvertently leaving the light on. So
are you going to, just replace them with regular incandescents?
Well, I'm hoping that I can do something different, but right now the easiest solution is from a convenience and money standpoint is that because they've got, there's a store about a 4 block, you know, just like it would be analogous to like a Kroger for you or a Feldspar, and just go down and get these 99 cent two balls per pack. Energy saver incandescent bulbs, which is what they say 5 watts. So, I mean that's not a lot, but that's the plan now. Now if I'm going to do some searching around and see if I can do. I know. I mean, the best thing to do would probably be an LED bulb, but I think those are what, $7 a pop. For the bulb?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah, that's about, yeah.
And we're replacing about 5 bulbs, that's $35. And I'm kind of being on a fixed income, I'm kind of it's a little bit pricier than I'd like it to be. I mean, if I could do this more over time, I would, and, you know, switch it on out. But, you know, that's how it goes, because I have to order the switches. The apartment manager ordered the switches, and it took him 3 weeks to get the first two. I think it was 3 weeks. It might have been more. Probably might have been six. But he's ordered more, so I'll just have to see how this goes. So I'm trying to figure this out. Oh, I already got a response. God, technology is wonderful when it works. Well, let's see. What else is going on with me? Not a whole heck of a lot. I've flooded everybody's email with a bunch of green stuff that I've run across for today so far. I thought I'd probably see if I could put it up on Foxed Up as like a Monday Green Links thing.
Sure.
Just so people will have something to read. And I think I just forwarded you something about food in the oil industry and all that jazz. So I thought you might appreciate that. So other than that, my life is fair. You had a good time at where you were at.
It was an uplifting time, most assuredly.
It sounds like it was a very eye-opening time too. Did I tell? No, I know I didn't tell you. We get to have somebody sing a tea party for after the 4th of July parade down here or up here.
The tea baggers are out again.
They are out here. So I come on the at the market like Saturday. Like, cause there's two blocks from my house where they're holding it. And I might walk down there just to see what kind of reaction they get. I'll try.
I don't know, Gene. Stay away. Them people are crazy.
I'll try and keep my mouth shut. I swear to God I will. I'll do what they did for, what the school did for the Shiloh guys. I'll go down with tape over my mouth. Maybe I'll write something.
No, or just stealth it and wear a, take a tea bag with you or something, pin it to your shirt, and that, yeah.
Oh, I wasn't actually going to get that close. I'm going to at least stay across the street. It's going to be hard enough to even stay that close. But anyway, so there's that and all that kind of stuff. And I was telling John last night about the, because some of the other stuff I was talking about are working here, because Portland's trying to do their climate change action plan. We've got to talk about lighting systems and stuff like that. And I was looking around for that. I was kind of surprised because there was this group in New York State. I think it's their version of the Sierra Club, because they're actually trying to get some legislation either passed or blocked down there. Over there, I don't know what, but apparently, unless you use those, they have them in Arizona to keep the skies dark, those directed lights or whatever they're called, you know.
Yeah.
So the astronomers can, apparently, if you've got the standard, all the standard lights and stuff, half of the output is wasted as far as the actual lighting, because it's just lighting up the sky.
Right, exactly, yeah.
And so I was thinking about that coal keeps the lights on motto that they use, and I keep asking, who? So, I mean, I suppose if you're a bat with glasses, I mean, it might be great, but how many of those do you see? Anyway, I will let you go, because I'm sure you've got other callers, and I will catch you later. But it's good to have you home.
Oh, thank you, Gene. It's good to be home. Good to be home.
Okay.
All right, we'll talk to you soon, and be careful changing those lights, man.
Oh, I will. I'm totally ready to die.
All right, will do. Take care.
Bye.
Bye now. News Ninja Gene, the man who gets up every morning and reads the entire internet. I kid you not. What he finds that makes horn programs so much more than what they otherwise would be. All right. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Brother Bob.
Hey, Brother Luke, what's up?
Well, I sent it to John, too. I sent him that article I sent you this morning on the best job in the world.
Yes. The guy who drinks Jack Daniels for a living?
Yes, their master taster. That's got to be the job you're sitting there going.
Yeah, but it's the spitting it out part that's bothersome.
Well, but he did say a little bit of it occasionally runs down the back of his throat. You know how it is.
Well, it can't be avoided.
Yep. It's like, that's one of them ones that are going, gee, when I retire, can I please have that job, please?
I'm working on my palate now. I can tell the difference between Dickel and Jack from 10 miles on a blind taste test.
When you tell the difference between number 7 and number 10, that's when you're getting good.
Or Gentleman Jack?
Oh, yeah. Oh. There's so many brands, I try not to think of all of them at once. It just mentally just kind of goes, ah.
Well, I have strange taste buds, and
I know.
I'm particularly fond of not that I just sit around with a bottle and a straw. That's generally reserved for special occasions when I've been driven absolutely the screaming, running around naked, crazy by the right wing. But I got particularly fond of something called Rittenhouse Rye, bottled in bond, and the stuff was $10 a fifth.
That's pretty good.
And it is smoother. It's a rye whiskey, and it is smoother than any other whiskey I have ever tasted in my life. So it's a screw top bottle, but it's won tons of awards, and it comes out of Bardstown, Kentucky. If you see it on a shelf somewhere, just have a taste.
It's worth it. No, I was sitting here watching this stuff this weekend. And it's like, say, you know, it's amazing how it does show the commercialization of the news cycle, where we can't cover news this weekend. We have to cover the Michael Jackson. You know, we have to cover watching the body being taken from the hospital to the mortuary or to the coroner's office. You know, I'm sitting there going, I said, damn, it's the OJ. It's the OJ following again. Is he going to make a break for it? What? You know, it's just.
I know. And the Friday morning, as we were getting ready to leave the Bates Motel, you know me, I like to just check on the news before we go. And I said, click over to CNN, son. And,
oh.
The world had stopped.
Yeah.
You know, there was no longer a democracy movement in Iran. There was no news out of Afghanistan or Iraq. The Wall Street banksters were completely unnewsworthy. It was all Michael Jackson.
I know.
And you know, his death overshadowed that of Farrah Fawcett.
Mm-hmm. Ed McMahon.
Ed McMahon's. Ed McMahon was a Marine and a war hero.
Oh yeah, I mean this man was on the air longer than Michael was alive. You know, you're sitting there going, and if you want to talk about somebody who changed TV, you have to look at Farrah Fawcett. For those of us who are old enough to remember, I was explaining it to one of my nieces the other day who she was. I said, you have to understand, when she first came out, her and Lee Majors, they were the Brad Pitt and Angelina of the 70s.
Oh. Yeah, and what's more, you know what? I can remember Sunday school lessons and sermons being offered to the young men in my Baptist church back then, inveighing against that poster. It's pornography. You do not want to sit there and have that on your wall, lusting after that harlot woman.
Hang on one second.
That's all right.
I had to switch phones. The other one was just about to go out.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. It's no big deal.
But, you know, the haircut redefined. Between Farrah Fawcett and Dorothy Hamill, they defined women's hair fashion for half a decade.
It's like you have to explain to kids now. It's like you have to understand. Back then, kids, there was no internet. This was our version of the internet, was buying posters and pictures and things like that. Where now you can download them and look at them all you want to. We had to buy them. Shameful thought. You know, you realize how much the world has changed, you know, in that 30 years. You know, it's like saying, you know, most people most people our age know, but, you know, people think now that you have big things. Well, shoot, when Charlie's Angels came out, they were rock stars. They couldn't do anything. You know what I mean? You know, they were like the Baywatch of the 70s. You know what I mean? If they appeared, somebody knew they were filming, God, it turned into a mob scene.
Oh, yeah. Okay, confession. I had the Farrah Fawcett poster, but I was a Kate Jackson guy. I was. The Smart Angel. Well, yeah.
Well, I'll be honest. I had her poster, but I had one poster I liked even better. You ever see the Adrienne Barbeau poster?
Yes.
That was better in my opinion, but that's just me.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, absolutely.
Each person their own choice. No, but we were talking about this weekend. You know, isn't it amazing how that all of a sudden, well, we can't talk about Senator Ensign. We don't bother to mention. We can't bother mentioning the fact that when he came back to the Senate, he got a standing ovation from the Republicans.
Oh, yes, he did.
Yeah, we can't talk about Governor Sanford and the new euphemism called, now I'm going to go hike on the Appalachian Trail, which will never be able to be used again. When you say you go hike on the Appalachian Trail, people start looking at you. Does this mean I ran to Brazil? What? You know.
Oh, Governor Sanford. It was Larry Craig who gave us the phrase, who put the phrase "wide stance" into circulation.
Toe tapping
and wide stancing. And now I guess we've got a new euphemism. Well, you know him. He just can't resist going to Argentina once in a while.
Somebody said the other night, now when you hike the Appalachian Trail, it's the new euphemism for hiking the Appalachian Trail, and I went down to Argentina.
Yeah, that's true. And hiking the Appalachian Trails, isn't it? Yeah. Did he get caught? Yeah, he was hiking the Appalachian Trail.
But the thing of it is that really gets to you on that is you're just sitting there going, why aren't people mentioning the fact that this idiot thought he could disappear for 5 days and nobody would notice?
Well, but it goes deeper than that, Luke. It really does. When you're the governor of a state, I mean, for all intents and purposes, you know, he's saying now, Mark Sanford will, is that he won't resign. All right? So he won't resign, but the fact of the matter is, he already did.
He abdicated.
Because when you are governor of the state, there's this little requirement that goes along with being governor. That's not to say that you can't go off to the men's room or something without telling somebody, but people generally are supposed to know where you are.
I mean, if a storm comes through, you're the one who has to, you know, maybe call out the National Guard, has to, you know, redeploy services to help people. And it's like, well, where is he? Well, he's somewhere on the trail. We don't know.
And the fact of the matter is, you know, we know now that his staff was lying. If South Carolina had any kind of government whatsoever, they would impeach him. And the grounds for impeachment would be that he abdicated his office.
Dereliction of duty. You know, it's one of those things, I tell you what I'd do if I was on the other side, I'd say, okay, he can stay, but he's got to wear one of them damn tracking bracelets on his ankle.
That's cute. Yeah, that'd work.
But we won't know where he is every minute from now on.
Or a shock collar with one of those invisible fences around the governor's mansion.
That's what the wife wants.
Yeah, I don't think she wants him to wear it on his neck, though.
I know, and she wants the voltage control.
Oh!
1 through 10. Where's that damn 11 button? Come on.
Now, this one goes to 11.
No, but it's just amazing. You see all this stuff. And you know, like we say, here are these things go on. I mean, your listeners know it. But today, the troops in Iraq are supposed to pull out of the cities.
Yeah, I've got that. This was Independence Day for Iraq.
Yeah. And you're sitting there going, and I barely heard it mentioned. The only reason I heard it mentioned is because every once in a while CNN puts on, I can't think of his name, that's over in Iraq. You know, their foreign correspondent, I can't think of his name. Oh, I'm sure, but you know who it is.
Yeah, oh, come on.
He's British or?
I think he's Australian.
Okay. I can't think of the name, but you know what I mean? He mentioned it, and that's the first time I'd heard anybody talking about it. I was sitting there going, wait, y'all, are we going to mention it somewhere? You know, I
mean, no, this is, yeah, this is a historic day. I mean, this is
a step down without leaving yet.
This is the deadline for American troops to leave their towns. And I guess that means that we all go back to the base camp carnage or whatever.
Yeah.
And we sort of sit there in our garrison forts.
Put up the concrete casings, and we all just sit around there and watch them go off. And when they go off, they'll fly out or run out in a convoy and turn around and come back after they're done. But, you know, like I say, there's something like that. And, I mean, you can't get it mentioned. How this thing now down in the Honduras? I mean, that almost got blown off the radar.
Has anybody seen John Negroponte lately? I mean, I'm just wondering where he is. If it turns up that he's taking a fabulous vacation in Tegucigalpa, I won't be surprised.
He could be down at the new Bush compound.
Again, just outside Tegucigalpa.
Mm-hmm. You know, he might be the head of security for them. Oh, yeah.
Might have got himself a nice new job with whatever the Blackwater's calling itself now.
I know. Isn't that fun? You know, like I say, when we get too much press, we just change our names again. You know.
Yeah, what are they? Z? Yeah, John Fox is in the chat room. He's in Honduras.
Yeah.
Well, you know that he is. Elliot Abrams got to be in Honduras.
It's like somebody said, I saw somebody today said, have anybody checked Fox to see where Oliver North is right now? He might be doing his show live from down there, you know.
Yeah, we probably got a little troika of right-wing mutineers hanging out in Tegucigalpa waiting for, yeah, because this was a right-wing coup.
You know, but at the same time, you know, I mean, here are all these stories that are being just totally blown off the ticker because of this. And I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, I accept it is news, but it is not hour to hour, full hour news. I mean, if you want to talk to it for about, you know, if you're on one of the 24-hour shows, fine. You talk to it for about 15 minutes. Good. There's 45 more minutes. We got to talk about the rest of the world. You know, I mean, I understand. You know, the thing of it is, what's driving it more than the news cycle is the advertisers. They're out there going, "Come on, we can get ratings points. Keep running this stuff up here. Keep showing these tributes. We show it every hour on the hour." Like, you know, I mean, it's just one of the things you're just kind of sitting there going, "Huh?" You know, it's like say, guys, you all keep and then you all cry at us because we don't pay attention to the corporate news. Guess why? It's like, look, I can turn over for ten seconds and see what's going on. It's like, right now I'm bouncing between CNN and other things. CNN, of course, started Campbell Brown show. She's talking about Michael. Oh yeah, it's had to run a bunch of pictures, all that good stuff. Then turn over to Oberman. Right now he is talking about Sotomayor, but you know what I mean. I'm sure. I saw when he came on.
Oh yeah, this is a great day to be a white guy.
You know, and the thing of it is, if you listen, I was flicked across a minute ago through Lou Dobbs territory, and if you listen to him for 10 seconds, you'd have swore it was a 9-0 decision, but it was 5-4. But in Lou world, it's 9-0. It was a major rebuke. It's like, guys, 5-4 is not a major rebuke.
5-4 is business as usual with the rats on the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm. And the thing of it is, it's one of those things. It's like,
or in this case, the K rats.
One of the thing of it is, they pretend like, well, she was the only one who made that decision. It's like, no, she was one of, was it three or five?
Yeah, three judge panel.
Three judge panel. And they had decided. It's like, and the only thing she essentially said was the judge below it had ruled correctly, had procedurally and. The thing, you know, had done it correctly.
She applied the law in the manner in which a sitting judge of the United States Circuit Court of Appeals must apply the law.
Mm-hmm. And they acted like, well, she had a really short decision on it. It was like a nine page decision, but it was in reference to like a 40 something page decision that the lower court judge had issued. But like I say, if you watch, I'm sure watch most of our mainstream media. By the time they're done, they'll have you convinced, like I say, that it was a 9-0 decision.
Oh, by the way, I'm getting a little note in from our buddy David in South Carolina.
Uh-huh.
Mark Sanford apparently married his wife for her money.
Oh.
You know, remember how Mrs. McCain, her family was into beer? You ever picked up an electric hardware product by a company called Skill, S-K-I-L? That's Mrs. Sanford's family.
Well, I just wonder, now, was there a previous Mrs. Sanford who might have got left behind for the new Mrs. Sanford?
I don't know, but David says her family owns Skill products, as in electric saws. I'd be a little nervous sleeping if I was Plantation Mark Sanford. Remember Lorena Bobbitt, Mark? Yeah.
It's one of those things. You've got to wonder, from what we've been hearing on that, is he back at the house, or is he staying at the office? Because it sounded like she wasn't real happy with him any which way. Apparently she'd caught him at this once or twice before and told him break it off, and he's like, oh, yeah, honey, I will. Then runs down there for 5 days. I don't think that's quite breaking it off.
Is attenuated off-breaking.
You know how it is. It's whatever we say it is.
Now, honey, I'm breaking it off. I'm breaking it off right now. Yeah, I'll talk. Let me break it off a little bit more. I'll call you right back.
Well, but I tell you what, I've been on too long. Let me let you get on some other people. So you have. I'm glad you're back. Did they have to drag you off the metro?
No. Everything.
I thought you enjoyed that. I figured you'd be still riding on that.
Yeah, it was. by the time we'd done all the walking we'd done, and with it running a little bit slower than usual because of the problems they've had.
Yeah.
I just wanted to get my burning feet elevated somewhere, because you know what? Once upon a time, I wore dress shoes everywhere I went. I don't do dress shoes very well now.
It's a special occasion. Otherwise, I'm a sneaker man now. It's like, yes, that's fine with me. I'll get good looking ones, but
yeah. Well, you know, I think I've entered my geezerhood. I'm going to buy a pair of wingtip shoes with rubber walking soles.
Oh, okay.
Because the heat of that DC pavement comes right up through those Florsheim leather soles.
I tell you what, this year, I don't know how it is up your way, but we're actually having a slightly cool week this week, and we were saying that we've had the hot for the last 3 or 4 weeks, and said it's kind of came out of ass backwards. But this week we're supposed to be right about the normal temperature, which seems kind of cool to us compared to what it has been. Been in the mid-90s, this week's going to be in the mid-80s.
It was plenty warm enough in D.C. It wasn't blistering, but plenty warm.
Oh, it's done well this year. All right, but let me let you go on and talk to some other people.
All right, take care, Luke.
You too.
All right, bye now.
Bye.
Yeah, by the way, and I'm going right back to the phones in a sec. By the way, in case you were wondering, and maybe this is a matter of me being behind the times, hiking Governor Sanford has issued his official reason for not resigning. Yeah, really. Now, remember, he's a Bible-thumping corporatist, so what kind of excuse would you expect? Well, yeah, of course. Here's the quote. I've been doing a lot of soul-searching on that front. What I find interesting is the story of David and the way in which he fell mightily. He fell in very, very significant ways, but then picked up the pieces and built from there. I remain committed to rebuilding the trust that has been committed to me over the next 18 months. And it is my hope that I am able to follow the example set by David in the Bible, who after his fall from grace, humbly refocused on the work at hand. By doing so, I will ultimately better serve in every area of my life, and I am committed to doing so. Now, just for the fun of it, bear in mind, he's just said that he will not resign the governor's office, even though he abdicated it, because he's using King David as a model. King David. He was, now, Now, remember, Governor Sanford is one of those supporters of the defense of marriage. Believes marriage should be between one man and one woman. And then there's David, which really explains a lot more than David's fall from grace. David had, what, 700 wives and 300 concubines, something like that? David was a busy man. But even though he had all them wives and all them concubines, he still found time to have a fling with another man's wife, at least according to the Old Testament. That woman's name was Bathsheba. She was married to a man named Uriah. And back up. Not only did David make the beast with two backs with Uriah's wife while Uriah wasn't there, you know. Yeah, David went hiking give me some mountains in Israel. David went hiking the Goshen Trail or some such. The Gilead Trail. And lo and behold, he sort of got Bathsheba all pregnant and stuff. So as quick as she said, "David, I'm pregnant," he said, "Well, bust my buttons. We're going to have to do something about that." So he gets one of his couriers, because he's got his troops off slaughtering somebody, because God said they didn't deserve to live anymore. That's how David was. He's a bloodthirsty bastard. And sends a note for Uriah to come home, because Uriah had found favor with the king, and the king decided he'd need a little furlough and a little bit of conjugal visitation. So the note from David gets to Uriah, and Uriah says, "Yea, verily, lo, I have received a note from the king telling me to come home and bang boots with my old lady. But yea, verily, that would be wrong for me to do, for no communique has come for the rest of these troops who are yea, verily, busy slaughtering ungodly heathens in the name of King David. So I will not go home and knock boots with my old lady." This did not sit well with King David the Just. So King David says, "Screw him," and writes another little note and hands it to another courier and says, "Yea, verily, take this unto my chiefest general, and see to it that Uriah is put in the front line, so that, yea, verily, he will be smitten and will die." Which Uriah then, and the general obliged David, and David obliged the general, and Uriah died, and there was no DNA nor paternity testing then, so I guess David just had another little concubine. So, how did God handle all this? Well, God is a God of love and a just God. And when God found out, you know, all-knowing, all-seeing, but has to wait for the news just like the rest of us, when God found out that David had just connived in the murder of one of his loyal subjects, God, yea, verily, got right wroth with David. And busted his chops about it. And David said, "God, yea, verily, I am sorry, and forsooth." And God said, "Not good enough. For yea, I am a just God, and I shall..." Wait a minute. "I ain't gonna smite you. You're the one who caused all the trouble. I'm not gonna smite you. Tell you what, David. I'm going to smite your new baby by Bathsheba. I'm going to murder that baby. And God did. Because God is a just and loving God. So he murdered a baby because of David's sin. And taking his cue from Almighty, just and loving God, David went and murdered a whole bunch of his neighbors with his armies. Thus saith the Lord. So that's who South Carolina Governor Mark Sanford is emulating. One wonders if he has had the husband of the Argentinian woman dusted yet. Maybe that'd be grounds for impeachment. Kind of got a hope. So that's that. And keeping things rolling along. Hey, welcome to the program.
Greetings and salutations for your return to Central Command.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very kindly, David.
Yes, you have a lot to, a lot to catch up on. You know, you just gave me a brilliant idea. Why it's never been done before, I don't know. But wouldn't it be amazing if a production company from either CBS or ABC took the Bible and turned it into a soap opera?
Oh, no, it'd have to be HBO because it's the dirtiest book ever written.
Right, exactly. It could be HBO. They have the characters. They have everything. Maybe they could even make it the Southern Bible. That way you could be the narrator in it. See, thinking ahead.
Awesome. Thinking ahead. Now wait.
For the horn.
Yeah, I could be. That'd be good.
That's what I'm saying. HBO does not have a Southern Bible show. Last time I checked. Anyway,
and after all, half the towns in the South are named after towns in the Bible anyway.
Exactly. Oh, I think we have an idea here. By the way, speaking of that, you start the
treatment, and I'll see if we can't get the meeting.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Speaking of that, I don't know if you've been there's a phenomenon, I guess, happening right now with the resurgence of zombies. There's a great article in L.A. Weekly. And one of the things, this is true, people, I don't know if people are aware of this, but did you know there's a phenomenon of doing mashups of books, classical books with zombies now? Did you hear about this?
No.
Apparently, some guys hit on a formula where you can take, it's a brilliant idea, you take public domain books and you do a mashup like they do with music. So you do a mashup with novels and a popular theme of the times of today. So what he decided was, one of his friends said, he said, I'm thinking of doing a mash, I'm thinking of doing a rework of this book. And his friend was like, you know, why don't you call it Pride and Prejudice and Zombies? and that was the title, and he decided to go with it, and it's a runaway hit. So I was thinking, you could do that. You could take a public domain. If some people want an easy way out to write a novel and to bring the issue of coal to the present today, you do a mashup of a classic public domain novel and mix coal into it.
Oh, that could be fun.
I know. So there's something for people to think about. I did want to say that I did listen to some of the hearings on one of the websites. And, wow, I just found it as a big amount of disrespect on the parts of the people who were the witnesses and the defendants and the scientists. It seemed to me not like I won't say a sham or anything like that, but.
Well, how do you mean? Elaborate, please, because, well, I mean, the Fockers don't respect anybody.
Right. Well, for example, when Marie Gonneau gave her statement, or rather, more so than that, she gave her honest impression of living in the mountains, it seemed like she deserved a little bit more of a statement than, we thank you for coming and blah, blah, blah. It's nice to have someone here, and that kind of, you know, I expected someone, not expected, but to hear this over and over again, it's kind of, I don't know, it's kind of disheartening for people to not realize that it's just from a script. No one really means it. And, you know, I mean, just for once, I'd like to see someone actually respond, really what they think to a story like that instead of reading these scripted answers. Because I think she deserved more when after she told her, you know, her experience living in the mountains and what she had to deal with.
Well, the thing, the problem was, the whole thing was kept on a very, very tight schedule, as all these congressional hearings are.
Right.
Maria, as you know, I mean, she's been on this program. Maria is not at a loss for words.
Right.
And she can tell in minute detail what life is like living with this nightmare. And I have a feeling she'll be telling more, because this was just the first hearing. I imagine the next hearing will require even more time, because you know, the friends of Cole are going to have their say. And they're going to tell their lies. They're trying to take us, they'll take our jobs away. Because if nothing else, the opponents of Senator Alexander, like Jim Inhofe, will try to get his fingers into it. So don't be surprised. And you know, I don't know that Agnes and me and the kids will be there, but our side will be there. And we've got more than enough information to provide. That was just the tip of the iceberg. But the shocking thing, David, was the just shameful behavior
right.
of the Fockers. But that's how they are. I mean, if you go to the Cole Tattoo blog maintained by Ken Ward at the Charleston WVGazette.com. You can see a photograph of the screaming, insane woman who sucker punched Judy Bonds on Tuesday last. In the West Virginia press, it is almost impossible to get any coverage of that. The woman came up and deliberately punched Judy Bonds in the face.
Wow. Now, how does that work? Do they get paid like in beer and cigarettes for doing this stuff, or do they just show up?
No, they do what they're told, because they are slaves to Massey Energy. I mean, there were some of these Fockers showed up in D.C. Thursday, David, wearing those damnable, stupid stripes. They wore their work clothes to the Senate. I mean, no class, no respect, no sense of dignity or aplomb. You know, and you just want to look at, do you wear that crap to church?
Do you expect them the next time to come with suits, or do you?
No, they'll come back in their ratty cut-off blue jeans and then their shirt. You know, they're not listening to this.
Yeah.
And nobody in West Virginia knows how they behaved. Now, that article that I read at the start of the program, I did shoot a response down to the Williamson Moral Volcano and Daily Battle Cry of Freedom, but I don't know if it'll get printed. But I did tell the truth. And I gave them the facts, and the facts are those people are crying because they weren't treated like royalty.
I just pulled it up here.
A few minutes before the hearing was to begin, after we'd already been there for hours, the coal lobby finally sauntered in, expecting seats in the hearing room as if they were the Queen of the May. They came wearing hastily printed identical T-shirts, ratty cut-off jean shorts, flip-flops, and ball caps, as if they were at Disney World and not the hallowed halls of the Senate of the United States of America. We radical grannies and granddads did, in fact, see the faces of those who yearned to keep poisoning our grandbabies, and we were not impressed.
I did want to mention that I don't know if you heard this on John's program, but I did mention that they had picked up this issue of the letter that Jeff Biggers wrote to, an open letter he wrote to Obama over the issue of the coal sludge. And
yeah.
Apparently, I don't know if you're familiar with this guy, but you might want to
who, Jeff Biggers?
Bookmark him. No, the person on Daily Coast who wrote this entry because...
Oh, Devil's Tower?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
It's an excellent essay.
Yeah, I was looking at the comments, and I was pleased to see that it wasn't like some other places that I've been to.
Yeah, in fact, yeah, I'm going to see if I can't find a way to get him on.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I think he's I've been looking at some of his entries, and just the way of how much he gets a response. What is he? I think it's up to at least over 100 comments now.
Yeah.
You know, so that's a good entry point right there on that.
Yeah, I need to go and have another look and maybe post a comment as well. David, good talking to you, my friend.
All right, Bob.
All right, we'll talk to you soon.
All right, later.
Get to work on that treatment. And we'll take a meeting. HBO's going to eat this up. And let's see what's going on. Oh, all right. Lines are clear. If you've got anything else you want to add, this would be the time to jump in. Now, there are many things on the plate this evening. This is a quote from the CNN story about the not covered very much story of this historic day in Iraq. These are the words of Awatef Jawad. He said, I'm assuming he, I don't know. I feel the same way as any Iraqi feels. I will feel my freedom and liberation when I don't see an American stopping an Iraqi on the street. Yeah. And the question now becomes one of whether or not the Iraqis will take control of their own destiny. We made this mess. We built this nightmare. And the sooner we are completely out of it, the better off it will be, and perhaps the Iraqis can begin to heal their own nation. But remember, we took a secular society, one in which Jews worshipped freely, one that had the oldest, one of the oldest Christian communities on earth in it, older than the Pope at Rome, older than Roman Catholicism, older than Greek Orthodoxy, old. That existed under Saddam Hussein. It doesn't exist anymore because of what we did. We also know now, we knew years ago, but the for-profit media are just getting around to reporting it, that the main reason that Saddam Hussein blustered about weapons of mass destruction, as they've been called, is because he wanted to keep the Iranians rocked onto their heels, lest they cross his borders. Yeah. Like I said, the liberal community, the progressive community, the decent human being community, we knew this years ago. But the fine folks at the New York Times have finally seen fit to publish those facts. I believe it was the New York Times. And by the way, in Iraq, the CNN story says there has been speculation in recent months that exceptions would be made to allow some combat forces to stay in some cities, including Mosul. The Iraqi government, however, has said no exceptions will be made, and its troops are ready to take over security. We are not gone. We are simply gone into our fortresses. We will not be gone until we are gone. It was a brutal week in Iraq last week. In the past 10 days, more than 200 Iraqis have had their blood added to the sea of blood that someday will surround George Bush in hell. One hopes that Barack Obama will wise up so that he will not wind up treading blood alongside George. Just saying. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Juanita.
I was on hold while ago, and my phone went dead.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I mean, I don't know, some way it just got cut off. I just wanted you to know and just call him in. I want to know what you call a female geezer.
Geezette?
Geezette. Okay.
Yeah, us geezers, you know, we're old dudes with a lot of hair growing out of our ears and, you know, not much on our heads. We wear our pants, the waist of our pants, about up to the bottom of our rib cage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like that.
We say things like, "Hey, you kids, get off my lawn."
Yeah. Well, I'm a geezette then, because I've done that. I want to know where the hearing. I kept trying to find the hearing all weekend, last week and the weekend, and I just finally gave up. I didn't see anything on C-SPAN about it. The hearing that you went to?
I understood that it was available online, although being there, I wasn't in a position to know, but that's what I heard. I don't know if C-SPAN was there or not.
Yeah, I mean, well, they've changed their website. I don't think it's as good as it was.
I noticed that, Juanita, and it's not as easy to navigate as it was.
No, it's not, and it's not very user friendly. The other one wasn't that great, but it was a lot better. So I don't know what they did, but I would love to have heard it. You know, the hearing. I wanted to hear it so bad, and I couldn't, I just couldn't find it. And see, I can get C-SPAN 3 online.
Right. And 2 as well, I would
say. But it wasn't on there either.
I'll be darned. If someone has a link and sends it to me, I will pass it along to you.
Well, who was in charge of it? Who was head of it?
Senator Cardin of Maryland and Senator Alexander of Tennessee jointly co-chaired it.
Oh, yeah. Well, how do you think it went?
Oh, it went very well.
Good.
It was satisfying. It was uplifting. It was nice to be able to tell our side of the story without having a bunch of Masseyites screaming obscenities and vulgarities at us.
Yeah.
Because they are a vulgar lot.
Yeah.
And a violent lot.
Yeah.
But it went very well.
Yeah, like I said, I would love to see it. And I couldn't understand why they wouldn't have at least filmed it and had it to show, you know, later on. Because sometimes they do that.
Well, if someone does find it, I will email you the link forthwith.
Okay. Can I say something about Michael?
Yes.
Well, I've been a fan since he was a little boy. I mean, he was amazing talent. And I think you're absolutely right. And I think that happens to a lot of these people. I think that's why a lot of them commit suicide. And they're so used and abused, especially those at a younger age and all. And it is very sad. And I would like to say that I watched the trial they had on Court TV. There was a while I was watching a lot of trials. I started with O.J. And that took a lot of devotion to watch. But anyway, I watched his trial. And one time he was hospitalized, and they mocked him and made fun of him, said, you know, he was playing sick, he didn't want to show up. And I'm talking about the people that were on the show, you know, the people,
right,
the hosts and all, some of. Anyway, then another time he hadn't showed up, and they said he was sick, and the judge sent word that he better be there in a certain time, or he would arrest him, have him arrested. And so they came in, and he was wearing his pajamas. So they were made fun of that, too. But when I watched the testimony of those kids, now, I didn't see too much wrong with what they testified, but their mother, she was a piece of cake. And if that woman was for money, I mean, you could just tell, and she had a history. And if she was so caring about her children, and she really thought that was going on, why did she let them go over there so much? But, so I don't know about, I'm just bringing up about his, you know, the problem, whether he was a pedophile or not, you know. I just think he didn't try to hide that he had them in his bedroom, you know, that his bedroom, you know, wasn't like our bedrooms were, you know, it's little, mostly little tight places. I'm sure he had everything in that bedroom. But that's basically what I wanted to say. And, but he just blows me away. And it broke my heart when he started having all those surgeries because he was a beautiful child. He was naturally a beautiful man, handsome. And it broke my heart that he went so far with all of those, you know, that's another thing, you know, when you have the money, sometimes you spend it. I think that's why a lot of times I haven't been, had a lot, is because God knew what I would do with it or something. And, so anyway, but I think it was a marvelous talent, and my favorite of when he was grown was Billie Jean. I think Billie Jean just is amazing.
Well, see, for me, Juanita, it's Rock With You from the Off the Wall album.
Uh-huh.
All right. And let me explain. I was never a particularly big Michael Jackson fan, but I am a very poor dancer. I am a bad dancer. I'm a non-dancing dancer, okay?
Oh.
All right. But when that song came on at a party or whatever, girls my age who would have looked at me and said, you know, get lost,
mm-hmm,
would dance with me. And, you know, as opposed, yeah, because they'd dance with a chair, they would dance with the wall. If that song was on, they would dance. And I would, so yeah, in the hormonal maelstrom of late adolescence, Michael Jackson was my friend.
Yeah.
Because I could at least get close enough to say, what's your name? You know, let's dance some more, anything. Because luckily, Ferg did not get that gene from me.
He can dance.
Well, it's not so. Yeah, I think so. But he also doesn't get dance with you. No, he doesn't get that. So, you know, lucky him. Juanita, good to hear from you, dear. And Nanette just sent me the link to the hearing, and I have forwarded it, per my promise, to you in the email. So go check your email.
Okay, and happy Geezerton to you, Geezerdom.
Yes, and thank you, and the same back to you, my fellow Geezerette.
Okay.
Take care, Juanita.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And keeping things going, hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, man, how you doing?
Hey, boss, what's happening?
Oh, same old stuff, man. And more stuff out there fighting a good fight and getting more and more, well, pissed off.
Yes.
At, well, and at Democrats, too.
Though I'm more mad at that, you know, snakes behave like snakes. Hence, why be mad at a Republican?
Well, I mean, you know, you were talking about Senator Rockefeller earlier, and, you know, and it's not just Senator Rockefeller. I mean, these people have failed so poorly, have stepped on everyone's expectations. I mean, what a disappointment. You know, I got a call from, I don't know, DCC, whatever, you know, give me money, Democrat.
Right.
You know, Democratic Congressional Committee, elect, right. You know, well, you know, if you could just, you know, with a $250 pledge, I said, I'm done. You know, I give money, and I can't give that much, and right now I can't give anything. Oh, but Mr. Eberich, blah, 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 you know. Even, you know, a $50, I said, no, you know, I'm done, and, I, you know, I can't give any more. Oh, well, just even with a, you know, $15, I mean, you know, like, she just wouldn't shut up, you know.
Yeah, she was bidding you down.
Huh?
Bidding you down, get anything.
Right, you know, and, well, you know, we need the money to increase our majority. Well, that was it. That was it. I said, let me tell you something. I said, I've been, you know, I'm a lifelong Democrat. I give money to Democrats all the time. I said, we finally got into a position where we could do something, and we're not doing anything. And the leaders that we have, Harry Reid, Nancy Pelosi, the whole nine yards. I said, I'm not going to give you any money. I tried to tell you that five times already, and you won't stop. So you're going to have to listen to this. I'm taking my money. And I'm going to try to find some Democrats that know what leadership is, that understand when you have a majority and almost a supermajority, that it's time for you to do something and you can do something. And none of the people that we have elected seem, not none of them, you know, some of them. I mean, the best damn Democrat we got is an independent from Vermont.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I said, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to spend my money to try to identify Democrats that could replace the piss-poor leadership that we have now and get them in office, and maybe we could get something done. And I hope we end up with 64 Democratic senators. But, you know.
The problem with that is, at this point in the game, Wayne, it's no guarantee that 64 senators who call themselves Democrats are 64 Democratic senators.
Well, no, they're not. And, you know, I went to a town hall meeting on health care the other day, which, you know, I'm very, very interested in. And, you know, so I go into the thing. Well, the mayor's there. Well, I just came back from Parkersburg, so I was late, and the mayor was making some kind of comment, and I sat down, and, you know, somebody said, well, you know, hi, Wayne, or something, and I said, well, I'm sorry I missed the mayor's, you know, whatever he said. I found out later he didn't say anything. I don't even know why he came there, you know, but he, well, you know our mayor.
Yeah, sadly, yes.
But healthcare is, I'm sick and tired of that. I mean, just everything is politics, you know. We have such severe problems, and you know, our health problem, our healthcare system is one of the major problems. I mean, you know, if we can solve this, and the only way to solve it is single payer. I'm sorry, that's the only way there is, you know. You call it the public option, you could call it whatever you want. But, you know, single payer is the issue. But you go to these things and expect to hear intelligent comments from, you know, other people are there, and people don't even know the issues. Yeah, you know what I mean? I don't know. I'm totally disgusted with this whole bunch. We have to get something done on health care. We have to get something done on energy and pollution and, you know, the cap and trade thing.
Our congressional delegation voted against it for all the wrong reasons. Dennis Kucinich voted against it. but gave cogent reasons for doing so. And he voted.
I would imagine those are justifiable reasons.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't know what they are, but knowing Dennis Kucinich, I'd take 60 Dennis Kuciniches.
Any day of the week.
In a second, you know. Well, leave room for Bernie. Leave room for Bernie.
Sure.
Because I think Bernie Sanders is a reasonable man.
Well, see, at that hearing I attended this past week, it would have been, Jim Inhofe, that the just crazier than a bastard rat Republican from Oklahoma, who doesn't even sit on that subcommittee, decided to make an appearance.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, and delivered his, the usual insanity.
What subcommittee were you before?
It was the Water and Wildlife Subcommittee of Environment and Public Works.
Okay.
And I would like to have seen Oregon's Jeff Merkley and Vermont's Bernie Sanders, two of the best liberals in the Senate, also sit on that overarching committee, and we need them in there.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. But anyway, I mean, just watching all this stuff and everything, I mean, it's really starting to get to me. And I don't know how do you wake these people up, Well,
that's the problem, Wayne. I don't know. It's because I don't know that they're asleep.
No, they're not asleep. They're doing, they're doing what the people with the money tell them to do, and that's the coal companies. It's just that damn simple. They're all bought and paid for, and, the majority of them are. And that's quite evident in their, especially the Democrats. I mean, the Republicans, don't even worry about them because, they don't count right now. But, our legislature and Senate don't seem to understand that they could, screw a bunch of bipartisanship. Get done the people's work. That's what you have to do. And they're not doing it. They're not doing it. So, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. It's really frustrating.
In the extreme, Wayne, because when this isn't like something that is difficult to sort out. We know what the answer is here. And watching these people do the wrong thing. I mean, did you read the
statement? That's a sad part, too, is because they know the right thing. In their heart of hearts, they got to know what's right. They got to, you can't tell me that if you, gave Nick Rahal some kind of truth serum and took him up to mountain and showed him that, and what they've done to Larry's last name?
Gibson.
Gibson's life and property and all that stuff. You can't tell me that's right. You can't. There's no reason in the world for it.
Well, it's really easy. It's really easy stuff. You don't do to other people what you don't want done to you. And so you ask Nick Rahal, would you want done to you what's been done to Larry Gibson, your constituent?
Right. Let's move a bunch of D9s. You know where Rahal lives up on Harper Road. Let's move a bunch of D9s and set up a drag line and start digging all around his house. We think there might be coal here. That's all,
Yeah. And you know what? This is going to mark me as a little bit, perhaps a bit of a hypocrite in a horse's rear end, Wayne.
Oh, my God, no. That wouldn't be the first time.
I know. I know.
It's the same thing, Bob. I mean, you're not by yourself.
Yeah. If we're going to continue mountaintop removal, I want mountaintop removal in Pocahontas County.
Yeah.
I want a lot of mountaintop removal in Pocahontas County. I want it right smack dab on top of Jay Rockefeller's house. I want mountaintop removal in Pocahontas County.
There you go. And all the people that oppose the windmills in Greenbrier County. I tell you, I wish I knew the right people, and I don't know if it would be against the law or something, but just to, like, when they were fighting the windmills, well, they're still fighting them, even though they're under construction as we speak, they're still fighting them. When Judy and a bunch of people from Coal River came down to that public hearing at the state fairgrounds?
Yeah.
You remember that?
Yes, I do.
And it sounded like Chris Farley there. I would like to have, you know, a couple weeks later, put a story on the front page of the local paper that, who the hell was the company that owns that? Westvaco.
Yeah.
All that land that Westvaco has decided they're no longer going to, pursue the windmill thing. It's just too much hassle. Too many people are against it. They've sold all their property to Massey Energy, and mountaintop removal starts Monday morning. I would love to do that, you know, and it's just like Judy and the people pointed out, and I mean, they had pictures and, you know, the whole nine yards and gave it to them people and said, here, we'll trade, we'll take your windmills. You take this. And, you know, none of them would have. Then the windmills would, if there was a choice between windmills like on Coal River Mountain, it, you know, if there was a choice between windmills and mountaintop removal, what would them people pick?
Oh, if those were the two choices, yeah.
Exactly. Well,
but see, these people in Greenbrier County and the people in the northern part of the state insist on having C on there. Choice A is mountaintop removal. Choice B is windmills. And these people in northern West Virginia, Greenbrier County, places like that, you know, gorgeous places. They insist on C, we want a pony.
Right. Exactly.
Well, you don't get a pony. You know, this state has been abused and brutalized since its very inception. And we're going to continue to be used to one degree or another, but I would far prefer to be used in a way that does not foreclose the next generation of my progeny. I'm a little funny that way.
Well, exactly. Exactly. Yes, they're all in it for the same thing, even the windmill people, money. But, well.
But you know what?
Windmills are a hell of a lot. You know, you could take the windmills down. It's been proven you can't put the mountain back.
There you go. And see, I'm conflicted because you know that I am genuine in my respect as you are and far more so. I'm genuine in my respect for anybody who gets up and goes to work for a living every day.
That's an honorable thing.
Yeah, you're damn right.
About one of the most honorable things there is, I think, work.
So, you know, I'm put at real sixes and sevens with these mountain remover types because I believe jobs are important. But the way they behave, I mean, if you could, I'll send you the link. If you could see the video of that Massey wife coming up out of the crowd to just slobber knock Judy Bonds at the protest and rally last week.
Oh, I do want to see that link.
You know,
maybe I shouldn't.
If you could have heard the vulgarity, if you could have seen one of these Massey wives with a bunch of rings on her finger, put her hands together so that it was nothing but knuckles, and drive them into the small of my wife's back. You know, you walk away from that and you go, screw them. I hope they freaking starve.
And, you know, weren't they all over, what, 93-year-old Ken Hector?
Oh, yeah, yelling and jeering. Your electric wheelchair runs on coal, Ken. You know, hooting, you know, I bear no love for the religion industry, but I'm not going to hoot and holler at a priest in the middle of a prayer. Jim Lewis was trying to say a prayer when some Masseyite was screaming about how he wanted to have sex with little boys.
That Jim Lewis does?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because he had the collar on. Jim Lewis is an Episcopal priest. Not that that makes a lot of difference in terms of how one responds. But do you know that's the only thing that got one of those Massey thugs thrown out of the meeting, out of the rally that day?
Is that right?
You know that, and you know, can you imagine? I mean, Wayne, come on. You know me. I'm a casual guy. I like my shorts. I like my flip flops. But can you imagine a busload of 100 or more people showing up at the Senate of the United States and trying to get into a hearing room wearing cut off ratty T-shirts, flip flops, ball caps on in the House, and T-shirts with the sleeves ripped out of them so they can show off their manly tattoos?
Those were Massey employees.
Massey and other coal people. There were UMWA hats there. And I looked one of them in the eye.
I don't doubt that. I don't doubt that a bit.
I looked at one of them and I said, my grandfather and my great grandfather sweated and bled to make the union that you're mocking now.
Well, I think that's what they're doing too. That's,
they're not, if they work on a mountaintop removal job, I'm sorry, Wayne. Like I said, I'm real conflicted about this. But that's no UMWA member. And I'll say that.
Not in my mind. Not the ones I admire.
But, you know, the thing that's important is to, but they don't want to hear it. You know, they're deaf to anything except we get to keep blowing up mountains, which tells me that they like blowing up mountains.
Yeah, well, and I.
And
you got to make a living, man. I understand that.
I do, too.
Make a living, you know. But.
Well, the fact of the matter is,
I don't see how anybody could participate.
With less than 5% of the blown up mountains in this state alone having been reclaimed, there is work for those men and women forevermore trying to put them to rights. But like I said earlier, we can't even start to do that until they stop making the mess.
That's exactly right.
And they can have the same rate of pay, they can have better benefits and better health care, if the people of the United States demand of their elected representatives that we do that. If we put a tenth of the money that's going into carbon capture and storage research into putting Appalachia to some semblance of rights, there'd be three generations of mountain removers who would have good, solid, steady jobs. Because it's going to take that long or more to fix the mess that they've made.
Exactly. And all the, you know, these guys are equipment operators is what the hell they are. And, you know, if instead of this, you know, I mean, I complained about the stimulus bill from the very beginning. I mean, you know, I was on Paul Krugman's side that it's way too small. And, it is way too small, and we have to do more. I was watching a thing the other night just on infrastructure alone, and I forget what, you know, I don't know, the National Engineering Society or blah, blah, you know, something or other. I mean, they estimate that if in the next 20 years we spent $3.5 trillion, or maybe it was $2.5 trillion, on infrastructure, our infrastructure would reach a point where it would rate a B grade. And just think of how many people that could put to work. It could put to work all these mountaintop removal people. I mean, they're hardworking people. They know how to work hard and stuff like that. Just give them the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Not destroy. How about let's fix and build?
Right, because D9 cats have a reverse, right?
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. And, but we, the politics, and it's so disgusting because what's true and not true? If one side proposes something, the other side is automatically against it. It doesn't matter if you're right or wrong. You just have to be against it. And, you know, the so-called Democrats we have in the Senate that, you know, probably should be Republicans because, well, they damn sure ain't Democrats.
Yeah, but it extends even further than that, Wayne. We're kind of running out of time. I wish you'd call a little earlier. It extends further than that. What do you say about a Kathleen Sebelius, who is in the Obama administration, who said that we can have anything but a public option for health care? You know, she's not in the Senate. That's the president of the United States, the guy that, you know, told us to hope for change. That's him talking through her.
And what was the quote?
We can have anything except a public option.
That's the only answer to the whole damn question is right there.
Yeah.
And public option meaning that flat, you know, that you take the profit out. You can't have a profitable health care system.
You can't have a for-profit health care system. You can't have a health care system.
For-profit, exactly.
Yeah, any health care system that is predicated on the agony, suffering, misery, and illness of other human beings is bound to fail because it's morally repugnant. And, you know, regardless of whether you believe in God or Buddha or Allah or Yahweh or, you know, whoever, the flying spaghetti monster, the force behind the universe, whatever you call it, there is something about that that despises manifest evil. And making a profit off of people's human misery is evil, isn't it?
That it is. That it is. Listen, I know you got to go. I got one more comment.
All right.
I got a call from Burlington, Vermont this weekend from a friend of mine telling me about a friend of ours who is dying, a Vietnam vet, 60 years old, and his lungs are no good. His lungs haven't been good for many years. And after all these years, 40 years, they're finally admitting that it's the Agent Orange. And it so disgusts me that the whole Michael Jackson thing, and the first thing I thought of when I heard that Michael Jackson died was, I'm glad it's over for the dude, man.
Yeah.
I mean, that is honestly and truly what I thought. But I got a buddy, Gary St. Louis, who hard-working, patriot, served his country, and at 60 years old, he's dying because our country that sent him there has denied the existence of Agent Orange and what it's done to all these people. And, you know, had they acknowledged that 35 years ago, he might be able to live till, you know, he's 75 or 80. And all the hoopla about Michael Jackson, you know, what about Gary St. Louis? It's disgusting. Our values are certainly distorted, very distorted. And I don't know, boss. I know you got to go. That was, I guess this wasn't a very happy call, but people got to wake up, man.
Yeah, we do.
Got to do something different.
Because the stuff we don't do has very real consequences, Wayne.
Yes, it does.
And we've got a generation down the road of young men and women who are coming home from Iraq now and will come home hopefully soon for good. And they're going to have their own generation's Agent Orange. And what we did to that generation and the Gary St. Louis's.
It's over. How about all that depleted uranium, buddy? What's that going to do? Huh? I mean, you know, this is a mess. Well, what we've done here pales to Vietnam, I think. That's a pretty hard thing to say, but we're going to have some, have some terribly troubled kids coming home.
And the sins committed against the Gary St. Louis's of the world are going to be made manifest and pressed down and shaken together and made 10 times worse for this next generation. And somewhere along the way, the American people have the right, Wayne, to say, stop it now.
Exactly.
Brother, I'm so glad you called.
That's a good note to end on, my man.
We'll talk to you soon.
To you. I got to see you sometime this week. I got a registration you would probably need if the police stopped you.
You know, that would be handy. They come in awfully handy.
Yes, they do.
All right.
All right, pal.
Talk to you later, man.
Bye.
Bye. That's the boss. That's Wayne. And I've run over by 5 minutes. My apologies to folks who were headed for Mike Malloy. I'll shut up now. Mike's up next over on his stream. And for those of you listening on the Mike Malloy stream after Mike's program, thanks for joining in. Always glad to make new friends. Thanks to John Fox again. Thanks for filling in last week. Thanks to Peter Godbold, our IT professional, who has been such a help through the computer crisis that has been this weekend. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, and thanks to the help that went out to WhiteRoseSociety.org last week. It is sincerely appreciated because everything that happens on the horn happens in part because of what Ben does at White Rose Society. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. When you see photos like, or video like that of Judy Bonds getting slapped by a vicious Massey wife, you know why I say about Coal River Mountain Watch what I say. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.